Rabbi Tendler mainly focuses on his favorite topics and more specialty issues in Hilchos Mila. We're going to try and go through Hilchos Mila and the Shulchan Aruch a little bit more comprehensively. We're going to try and stick to the Shulchan Aruch and go in order of the topics that come up, but we will deviate here or there. Some svarim that you should be aware of that could aid your limud of Hilchos Mila now as your Chazara or even beyond this limud this year is the Sefer Abris by Rabbi Peretinsky, which is more of a classic Sefer. Everyone steals from it and everyone quotes from it, so you should be aware of that. But the more contemporary Sefer that everyone commonly has is called the Oitzer HaBris, a four-volume set of svarim by Yosel Lemoyel. And two sets of svarim that you should have in general, which we've mentioned previously, but are particularly relevant to Hilchos Mila, and that's the Nishmas Avraham, which is the classical work on all medical ethics, and Rabbi Dr. Steinberg's work, Encyclopedia Hilchotit Refuit, which is also a very worthwhile set of svarim to have. They have them both in the library if you don't have access on your own, but they're a set of svarim that's worth investing in. A lot of the Marim Akarmis that we're going to quote, especially with regards to the medical issues, come from those two sets of svarim. So let's begin, though, Hilchos Mila, which is over here on Simen Reish Samech, where the Shulchan Aruch begins, that Gedola Mitzvah Zu Mishar Mitzvah Zaseh, the Mitzvah of Mila is greater than all other Mitzvah Zaseh. And the Shach explains this of Kohen Aleph, that that's because there's a chorus if you don't perform the Mitzvah Zaseh. Generally speaking, the Mitzvah Zaseh, you just miss out on an opportunity if you don't perform it. But this Mitzvah Zaseh of Mila, together with the Mitzvah Zaseh of Karban Pesach, if you don't perform them, so then there's a punishment of chorus. So the Shach writes that that's why Gedola Mitzvah Zu Mishar Mitzvah Zaseh is because there's a punishment of karis if you don't perform it. Because of that, the Minchas Chinuch, the Mitzvah of Mila, has a suffix about how much money you have to spend on the Mitzvah of Mila. Generally speaking, the Ramah is the rule in a few places. It's in Hilchos Lulav, it's in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, earlier in Siman Kufnun and Kes, I think, in Yoredeah, where the Ramah explains the rule that when it comes to a Mitzvah Saseh, so a person has to spend Ad Chaymish Nechasav, until a fifth of what he has. And when it comes to a lois assay, though, you have to give up kohon besoy, everything that you have, rather than violate a lois assay. So how much money does a person have to spend when it comes to the mitzvah of Mila? Is it treated like every other mitzvah assay, in which case you just have to spend up to a chaymish of nechasov? Or perhaps you should treat it like a lois assay because it has a punishment of karis that's associated with it. Gedol mitzvah zu misar mitzvah assay, perhaps has a practical relevance that you have to spend ad kohon besoy in order to be makam in the mitzvah of Mila. It could be that there's an afkamina to this discussion. Rabbi Tendler, I think, touched on this, at least in the past, I don't remember if he did it this year, is how much money do you have to spend with regards to the Mitzvah Mila is relevant for a person, let's say, who's somewhere outside of the metropolitan area where you have to pay money. You have to pay money to bring in a mile. So how much money do you have to pay to bring in a mile to come to New Zealand in order to perform a Mila? So it depends. It could be that it would be a very expensive proposition. So if it's less than a chaymish nechasav, of course you have to spend it. But let's say it's more than a chaymish nechasav. Do you have to spend that in order to fulfill the mitzvah mila? So if it's a regular mitzvah zaseh, that's out of the minchas chinuch, only a chaymish nechasav. It's treated perhaps more severely because it has an einish of karis associated with it. Perhaps you even have to spend more, perhaps even at kohen beisai.
Would you have to spend more for a mitzvah
bismana? Okay. Well, it depends with the einish of karis. We'll get to that later.
And karis is on.
Yeah, when does the karis set in? Is it every day? Is it later on? If it's because of karis, so then...
It's certainly not before he's got them.
Yeah. Okay. And the Shulchan Aruch also begins over here, Simei Reish Samech Sif Aleph, Mitzvah Saseh La'av Limo Az Benoi. It sounds like it's a mitzvah on the...
It's not to avoid the karis, it's just karis...
It's because karis, exactly. I don't want to get involved in this whole session. Yes, yes, agreed. Mitzvah Saseh La'av Limo Az Benoi. There's a mitzvah on the father to do Mila on his son. So it sounds like there's a unique mitzvah on the father. And in fact, the Smach counts this as two separate mitzvahs in Minyan HaMitzvahs. One mitzvah on the child to do Mila on himself, and then another mitzvah on the father, particularly to do Mila on the son. Rav HaRishonim do not count it as two mitzvahs in the Minyan HaMitzvahs. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs and the Sefer HaChinuch only count it as one mitzvah. But but the Smach counts it as two mitzvahs. How come the Rambam only counts the smack? How come the Rambam only counts it as one mitzvah? So the Rabbi Ruchem Fischel Perl explains in his comments on the Rasag, the same is found in the Birka Shmuel in the name of Reb Chaim, that it's because the Rambam feels that it's really a mitzvah on the child, but the mitzvah on the father is to see to it that the child performs his mitzvah of Mila. But there's not necessarily a unique mitzvah mila on the father. It's just a mitzvah on the father's to see to it that the son fulfills his mitzvah. So that's why Reb Chaim claimed that once the child grows up and he's a bar mitzvah of his own, has the opportunity to perform mila all by himself. So then there's no longer an obligation on the father to see to it that he performs mila, because now he's his own gavur. He can perform mila all by himself. Even though that the Rambam only counts it as one mitzvah, and it's only a mitzvah on the father to see to it that the child fulfills his mitzvah. We don't pass it like the smack that there's two mitzvahs, one on the child and one on the father. But there are echoes of the smack felt throughout the limud of Hilchas Mila, and if you pay attention, you can hear these echoes of the opinion of the smack that perhaps there is some unique status that's awarded to the father. We don't necessarily believe that there's a independent mitzvah on the father to be mal the son. It's just that he has to help the son to fulfill his obligations to the mila. But there is a unique status that's awarded to the father above and beyond all others when it comes to performing mila on his son. For example, you find this in three areas of Shulchan Aruch. For example, in Siman Reish Samech Hei Sif Beis, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the halacha discussion about what bracha do you make when you perform mila. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rambam, if the father is doing mila on his own son, so then the bracha is limo asabein. If he's doing mila on someone else's son, then the bracha is al hamila. So if the father is doing the mila, it's limo asabein. If he's doing mila on someone else's son, then it's al hamila. And the Rambam distinguishes elsewhere that when it's your mitzvah, so the Rambam says the bracha is lit. My example I always give is lekvaya mezuzah. If you are kaveya mezuzah on your house, the bracha is lekvaya mezuzah. If you are kaveya mezuzah on someone else's house, even though he's mekayim the mitzvah, since you're doing the maisa mitzvah, you make the bracha, and the bracha is al kviyas mezuzah. So if the Rambam is following in his pattern, so then what it emerges is, according to the Rambam, when you do mila on your own son, it's your mitzvah. Even though it's really a mitzvah to help the son fulfill his obligation, but Kol Zman, the child is a katan, and the father's doing it for him, he gets a unique status, and it's kind of like his mitzvah. So it's limo asabein as opposed to al amigo. The Ramah writes that we don't have this distinction, we always make, the Yesh Cholkin says the Ramah, that we always make the bracha of al amigo. But that was the opinion of the Ramah, or the opinion of the Rambam, is that perhaps there's this distinction between when the father does mila as opposed to when someone else does mila. Another time that you see a unique status is awarded to the father is in Reish Samech Hei Sif Aleph, where the Shulchan Aruch has a discussion of the bracha of Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu. After the Moyo makes the bracha of Alamila, so the father makes the bracha of Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu. So the Rambam's opinion over here in the Shulchan Aruch, which I think is a Yesh Aimrim, the Rambam's opinion over there in the Shulchan Aruch is that if the father is there, he says the bracha of Achnisa Bevisha Shamavon Avinu. And if the father is not there, then, the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch is that if the father's not there, then someone else makes the bracha of Achnisa. If the father's there, he makes it. If the father's not there, someone else makes it. But the Gra in Sifkat in Beis quotes from the Rambam, that no, if the father's not there, nobody makes it. I think that's the opinion of the Rambam. Harbei Chokim Azeh, that if the father is not there, so then the bracha is not made. Meaning that this bracha is unique to the father. So if he's there, he makes Achnisa Bevisha Shavram Avinu. If he's not there, there is no bracha. Again, you see the unique status awarded to the father. We are not passing like that. We passing if the father's not there, someone else makes the bracha. But that is the opinion of the Rambam. A third place, we see this issue perhaps coming up is Siman Reish Samech Hei, also Sif Zayin, with regards to the bracha of Shechiyonu. The Shulchan Aruch says that if the father is there, then he says the bracha of Shechiyonu. If the father is not there, so then you don't make a bracha of Shechiyonu. I think that's in Sif Zayin. If the father is there, so Reish Samech Hei, Sif Zayin. If the father is there, he makes the bracha of Shechiyonu. If he's not there, no one makes the bracha of Shechiyonu. The Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam holds the father makes it wherever he is. If the father is there, he makes the bracha of Shechiyonu. If the father is not there, he makes the bracha of Shechiyonu wherever he might be. So again, you see a unique status awarded to the father. L'maisa, the Sfardim follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that they make the bracha of Shechiyonu on mila. The Ramah, though, already limits this, and the Ramah says that only if it's a bechor and the father is doing the mila, then you have a bracha of Shechiyonu. But if you're missing one of those elements, either the father's not doing the mila or the child is not a bechor, then there's no Shechiyonu, and then the Shach does away with the whole Shechiyonu entirely. Shach says, we no longer make a Shechiyonu. So the Gra already doesn't like this. Why no Shechiyonu? So the Gra quotes from the Rav Yoh that perhaps the reason why we don't make a Shechiyonu is because there's Tara de Yenukot. That's the standard reason. Because it's tzara d'inuka, the child is in pain, so how could we make a shachiyona while the child is screaming in pain? So the Gra doesn't like that reason. He quotes like that from the Rav Yo, but he doesn't like it because his Maimonides' opinion is when a child yarshins from his father, if the father passes away and the child yarshins, he makes a brach of shachiyona, and that would say yarshins. So you see, even though he's in Avelus, even though he's in terrible pain because the father passed away, nonetheless he makes a shechiyanu. So you see, even though there's a makom tsar, you can still make a shechiyanu on something new. So why couldn't you make a shechiyanu on the Mila, even though he's a tsar of the Yanuka here? So the Gra says, it quotes from the Rashba, that there's no good reason not to make a shechiyanu. Over here, Islam Advav in the Bira Gra. Quotes from the Rashba, that the loy matza tam lozeh. Why you shouldn't say Shechiyonu. So the Gra's opinion was that you should say Shechiyonu. So in Eretz Yisrael, where they follow the Minhagim of the Gra, they make Shechiyonu. Or in other shuls in Chutzlars too, where they follow the Minhag of the Gra, they make Shechiyonu. But most Ashkenazi shuls. Or Sephardim also make a Shechiyonu. That was the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. But the Ramah, the most Ashkenazi shuls, at least in Chutzlars, do not make a Shechiyonu. I don't think I've ever seen a Shechiyonu by a bris. Okay, but this area over here, well, who makes the Shechiyonu? If the father's there, so then you can make it. If the father's not there, so the Shulchan Aruch says no one makes it. So that, again, you see the perhaps unique status of the father. Another fourth place, perhaps, where you see the unique status of the father, all the way back to Simei Reish Samech, where we started, is in the Gilyan Marsha. The first Gilyan Marsha says, if the father knows how to do Milo, so then he's not supposed to give it to somebody else. He's supposed to do it himself. And this is quoted by the Pisrei Tshuva and Simin Reish Samach Dalet Zivka and Aleph. He calls him the Shach also, that perhaps there's no Shlichus over here. The father can't give it to someone else and it's his Shliach. So if he knows how to do Mila, if he doesn't know how to do Mila, he has no choice. But if he knows how to do Mila, then he shouldn't give it to somebody else. The Ksais HaChayshin quotes this in his discussion where he explains, everybody quotes it when we learn Hilchus Shlichus, the famous Ksais HaChayshin, that Shlichus only works when it comes to a mitzvah that is not a mitzvah shebegufoi. If it's a mitzvah shebegufoi, like to wear tefillin, or to wear a talis, or to eat matzah, you can't appoint a shliach to eat matzah for you. You can't appoint a shliach to wear tefillin for you. Why? Because it's a mitzvah shebegufoi. The only time shlichus exists is if it's not a mitzvah in your body. So obviously, the Ksais HaChayshin writes that according to this pshat, that you can't give the milo to somebody else, must be that the milo for the father is a mitzvah shebegufoi, like tefillin, or like eating matzah. And that's why he's not allowed to give the mitzvah to somebody else. So because of that, many, throughout the years, there have been many who would, fathers who prefer to do the mitzvah milah themselves. It's a chumrah, a hidah to do it, if you know how to do it. Or Rabbi Tanna mentioned that sometimes you can get a mail just to set it up for you, and once you have the shield there, the mugging, it's not so hard, you just slide, I can't speak from experience, but it's not so hard apparently, you just slide the scalpel over the mugging. And it isn't that big a deal. Why would a father want to do it? It's not just because he wants to participate and feel like he's relevant. The father would want to do it because if he knows how to do it, it's a mitzvah shebegufa. You're not allowed to give it to somebody. You can't give it to somebody else because shlichus doesn't work. It's a unique mitzvah for the father. Rav Shechter writes in one of the svarim that he has in the Rav, I forgot which one, that Rav Chaim was machmer like that. And Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, he did the bris. You know which one? I forgot which sefer it's in. And then he said, I think he says over there, Simcha Zelig told Reb Chaim that it's enough. When it came time for the Brisk Rav's Mila, he told him, no, let the Moel do it. I don't know why. I think he thought Reb Chaim didn't do a good enough job. But there are people, if you have, especially doctors, I know doctors who will do this, that they'll at least perform the scalpel part. I mean, they'll let the Moel set it up, but they'll do the Mila, and that's a kiyum in this idea. The Ramah disagrees. In the Dark Emotion, the Ramah holds Shlichus does work by Mila. And this is also seems to be the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. Even though the Gilyan Marsha calls him the Shach, and the Pisrei Tshuva, and the Reish Samadal calls him the Shach, Sukkah, and Aleph, and the Ktais HaChayish, and Mitzvah Shebegufo, and all that stuff, that Shlichus doesn't work, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Simei Reish Samech Hei Sif Tes, and we should tell people to do this. Simei Reish Samech Hei Sif Tes, the Shulchan Aruch says, Avi HaBein Oymed Al HaMayel Vodiyah Shehu Shluchoi. The father is supposed to stand over the mile and tell him right before the mila. Most mile will say to you, tell me I'm your shliach. But then the father should know about that. But the father is supposed to stand there and appoint the mile as his shliach. So you see, shlichus works. Reish samech hesif tes, avi ben oimer al mile adi yeshu shluchai. So you're supposed to say he's a shliach. So that sounds like the Darkei Moshe, that Ramah who disagrees that shlichus does work when it comes to mila. So anyway, this could be a fourth area. If shlichus doesn't work, this could be a fourth area where you see a unique status awarded to the father when it comes to mila, that even though he's just here to help the son be mekayim his mitzvah, but perhaps he does have some sort of unique status. Both of these pshatim, though, whether shlichus does work by milo or shlichus doesn't work by milo, are making a big assumption, which is subject to machlekes, and that is they're assuming the mitzvah of milo is the act of removing the arla. But that might not necessarily be the case. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Menachos and Daf Mem Gimel that at one time happened that David HaMelech was sitting in the mikvah and he became depressed because he was Arum min HaMitzvahs. He realized it was the first time in his life that he had no mitzvahs around him when he was sitting there in the mikvah. Until he remembered that he had with him the mitzvah of Mila. Minis Yashva Daito, he says Gemara. And then he calmed down because he had the mitzvah of Mila with him. So others asked, Ari HaKadosh asked, what about at night? What mitzvahs did he have with him? So he's talking about, well, a mezuzah. What about the tzitzis? Blah, a whole discussion with wearing tzitzis at night and how what the nature of the mitzvah mezuzah is. All relevant questions. But anyway, but what the Gemara says, not what the Gemara doesn't say, that's what the Gemara doesn't say. What about tzitzis? What about mezuzah? What about at night? But what the Gemara does say is that he was nisyash v'daiter because he realized that he had the mitzvah meal with him. So the Marach or Zaruah asked, but he doesn't have the mitzvah meal with him. The mitzvah meal happened when he was 8 days old. What does he have with him now? So the Marach or Zaruah explains, no, you see from here that the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is not to remove the act of removing the Arha Arga, it's rather the status of being Mahul, of being Gemal. The status of having no Arga, that is the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Mila. Not the act of removing the Arha Arga per se, but the status of being Gemal, the status of having no Arga. This pshat, this perspective on the mitzvah of Mila, comes up and is a subject of debate between the Paiskim in a few areas. For example, one area where this issue comes up is the subject that Rabbi Tendler mentioned with regards to anesthesia. Either a topical anesthetic or general anesthesia when it comes to Mila. So Rabbi Tendler pointed out that it used to be in antiquity that people thought that children didn't experience pain during Mila. Even not so long ago in hospitals, they didn't give children anesthesia when they had surgical procedures because they thought they weren't experiencing pain. Rabbi Tendler mentioned his hormone test, that there's a hormone that's emitted when you experience pain, and the children emit this hormone even when they're little children. So he realized children do, in fact, experience pain. Fine, so there's pain during the mitzvah of a meal, and the children are experiencing it. So should we alleviate that pain? So Rabbi Tendler mentioned that the Paiskim quote from a medrash in Parshas Lech Lecha, it's in the binder, that Avram Avinu did mila specifically during the day, lahachbil scharoi, in order that he should get extra reward, because lefum tzara agra, the more pain that you're in, the greater the reward. So because of that, the Shevet Alevi, and in the Tshuvas, the Imre Yosher, Rameir Arik, both write, that a person should not alleviate pain during mila. It's a hidor. The more pain, the better, because lefum tzara agra. So Rav HaPais can reject that notion, that there's an obligation to increase tzar. It's a foreign concept to us in general. There's an inyan to increase. It means if you happen to go through tzar, then you'll get reward. But it doesn't mean you should intentionally go about to orchestrate it. So Rabbi Avadia writes in the Yabiya Oimer already before him, though, the more of earlier tshuva about this was in the Sweet Ayesh with regards to anesthetics, and topical anesthetic, that they both write that even though Avram Avinu experienced tzar and therefore got reward, doesn't mean that you should go about creating it. So your anesthetic, at least a topical anesthetic, would be allowed. Dr. Abraham in the Nishmas Avram writes that he surveyed all of the Mikubalim in Eretz Yisrael to find out if there was any opposition to this also, and they were also, and said there was no opposition to it from Mitzad HaKabbalah either, that it's we're in the clear if you want to use an anesthetic. And Dr. Abraham also writes in the Nishmas Avram, he checked with Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, and they both held that it was, if the parents want it, that it is allowed. Dr. Steinberg in the Encyclopedia of Chatit Rifuit writes that Lamaisa, he doesn't think Moelim use it because it makes the area slippery. You're introducing another substance into the area which could compromise the efficiency with which they do their mila. So that's why they're hesitant to do it. Moelim in general are hesitant to change any practice, so they're not going to want to introduce even a topical anesthetic. But Rabbi Tendler claimed if you apply it early enough, then it will be all absorbed and you won't have that concern. So Rabbi Tendler, as we know, compounds his own anesthetic, a topical anesthetic to be placed in the makom ha'mila before the meal, and his moelim do use this topical anesthetic. But generally speaking, it's not something which is even discussed, let alone something which is used. But that's when it comes to a topical anesthetic on the child, because the child is not old enough to ask for it or to protest. But when you have a person later on in life who's coming to mila, let's say about Shuvah, 50 years old. So what are you going to say? And you know, there, the little Rabbi Tendler's compounded cream is not gonna get you too far. He's going to want a general anesthetic. Huh. So what about that? And he's there to protest. He's there to argue for himself. So can you have, what about a general anesthetic? So the Sri Deish writes, topical anesthetic, yes, but a general anesthetic, no, because it's, because mitzvah strichas kavana. You have to have kavana when you're going through the mitzvah of milah. The Marsham also has like that. No general anesthetic.
Baby has kavana?
Maybe not. But here is the older guy.
This is not
a father, baby. Father. Ooh, ooh, ooh. But what about the older guy? We'll get to Geirus. Geir needs milah. What are you going to say? Nothing? The Marsham. Both say no general anesthetic because you need mitzvah strichas kavana. So if Itzel Lepanovich and the Zeicher Yitzchak, almost every Mar Makom we're going to be quoting is in the binder. The Zeicher Yitzchak disagrees, Itzel Lepanovich, and he quotes from this Marakor Zaruah. No, the mitzvah of Mila is not to remove the Arha Arla, that you could speak about, oh, you have to have Kavanah, at that time you're removing the Arha Arla. No, the mitzvah of Mila is Gemal, is to have no Arha Arla. So when he wakes up and he's Gemal, he's Mahul, now have Kavanah. That's when he's Yaitse, the mitzvah of Mila. The mitzvah of Mila is not the act of removing the Arla per se, it's being Gemal. So again, this issue might play a role in that discussion of whether or not you can use a general anesthetic. Another area where this issue comes up is found over here in Siman Reish Samach Aleph Sif Aleph, where the Shulchan Aruch says, of course, in loy mal chayv karis. If you don't do milah, you're chayv karis, as we mentioned already. The Ramah adds, uvechol yoim, oivrim ba'in shenelu. Every single day that you don't do milah, a new chayv karis. How can you be dead if you're dead already? Good kasha. But every single day, it accrues another chayv karis. So the Gro, though, quotes over there, Sivkot and Beis, that was the opinion of the Ravid. But the Rambam writes, you're only Chayiv Kares when he dies and he hasn't done Milah. You'll say, he's dead. What the Chayiv Kares Rambam? Again. But the Rambam says, when you die and you haven't performed Milah, Kares now. Kares every day? No. So what are they arguing about? The Ravid holds this Kares accrues every single day. And the Rambam holds, no, there's only Kares when you die. So Rabbi Yosef Engel explains in his Shuvas to Ben Peiras that they're arguing about this issue. Is the nature of the mitzvah of Mila to remove the Arha Arla? In which case, it's one time in your life you got to remove the Arha Arla. So you have, if you didn't do it today, do it tomorrow. You didn't do it tomorrow, do it the next day. You'll have your whole life till the guy passes away and there's no longer an opportunity to remove the Arha Arla. Now he's Chayiv Kares. That's the Rambam. It's only at the end of his life. But according to the Ravid, the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is to be Mahul. So every second that you're not in that status of being mahu, of having, not having, the mitzvah is to walk around without an arha arla. So every single day that you're in violation of that is a new chi of karis. Because you're not in that situation of being mahu. Another situation where this, or scenario where this issue comes up is with regards to the comment of the Taz in Siman Reish Samach Beis, next page. Siman Reish Samach Beis of Kohen Gimel with a child, with regards to a child who is sick who gets better. So when the child is sick, he can't do the milah. Now the child gets better, he can do the mitzvah milah. But the child, let's say, only got better for the first time on a Thursday. So we know, we spoke about it when we learned Hilchos Refuah B'Shabbos, you're not supposed to perform an elective procedure on Thursday or Friday. Gimel Yomim, Kaidim HaShabbos, you're not supposed to perform an elective procedure. Wednesday also, really. But the Pasuk tells us that that the third day after Avraham Avinu's Mila was the most difficult day, because the Pasuk says at the beginning of Parshas Vayera that the sun rose and it was Kechayim Hayayim, and it was also the difficult day, the most difficult day was the third day after the Mila. Rashi quotes in El Chumash. So therefore, if you're going to do the Bris on Thursday, the most difficult day will be Shabbos. You'll probably have to be Mechalel Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh if you do the Mitzvah Mila on Thursday. So therefore, the Taz says, let's say the child gets better on a Thursday. So Gimel Yomim Kodem HaShabbos, you're not supposed to go on a boat trip because on boat travel used to be very dangerous and you might have to be Mechalel Shabbos on Shabbos. So you shouldn't go on a boat trip on the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You'll probably have to be Mechalel Shabbos on Shabbos. So Sotu says the Taz, if you have a Mila that's already been pushed off, if it's a Mila Bizmana, you have no choice. But if it's a Mila Shaloi Bizmana, it's already been pushed off. So says the Taz, you know what? Push it off till Sunday. Thursday, Friday, you can't do it because you're going to have to be Mechalel Shabbos. So it's like, Gimel Yomim, Kodem HaShabbos, Ein Mafligim B'Sfina, because you'll have to be Mechalel Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. So too says the Taz, no Mila on Thursday or Friday because it'll have to lead to Chilul Shabbos. The Shach disagrees over there, Sivkot in Yurches, I'm sorry, not here, Reish Samach Vav, later on, Sivkot in Yurches, the Shach disagrees. And the Shach says, because the Gemara says over there in Shabbos, Gimel Yomim, Kodim HaShabbos, you're not allowed to go on a boat trip. That's if it's Ledvar HaRishus. If it's Ledvar Mitzvah, then you are allowed to go on a boat trip. So the Shach says, Ein Lecha Mitzvah Gedoy LeMizu. There's no greater mitzvah than the mitzvah Mila. So you're allowed to do the mitzvah Mila on a Thursday or a Friday. Most Paiskim, I believe, passing like the Shach. You can do a mitzvah, a Mila Shaloi Bezman on a Thursday or Friday. But there are those who are machmir for the Taz. Not to do it on Thursday, Friday, they'll put it once it's a Mila Shaloi Bezman and the child wasn't well, but once it's Thursday, Friday, they'll push it off to Sunday. Katzenstein won't do it on a Friday, but we'll do it on a Thursday. Because I think he says nowadays that's the most difficult meal. The day after the meal is the first day after, not second day after. Yeah.
I don't think
he will
do it on Thursday.
Won't? Oh, no Thursday either?
He told me he wouldn't do it on Thursday.
That he said to you. I don't know. I think he's told me, Pinchas has told me, or Pinchas has told me, he'll do it Thursday, not Friday. Thursday, but not Friday. But you asked for Pinchas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard from Pinchas too. Oh, but I think many would do it. So the Pisrei Tshuva though says, well, based along the lines of the Taz, the Pisrei Tshuva says over here, Reish Samech Beis, Sifkaten Beis, Kotam Enoi to be Yehuda, the many Adaminik, once you have a Mila Shalom Bezmana, not only on Thursday, Friday. This is the Das Balabatim. Mila Shalom Bezmana is always Sunday. Sunday, what do you mean, Matriach people? Wednesday, Tuesday. Mila Shalom Bezmana, push it off to Sunday. It's always a Sunday, Bris. And then in times of Noi Behuda, they'd even worse. They push it off to Erev Pesach, so you shouldn't have to make a Siyum. Kvetch a guy to make a Siyum. Oh, have a Mila. Every Erev Pesach, have a Mila. So they pushed it off. You had a baby born in December. That was a Mila Shalom Bezmana, so you push it off already to Erev. Once you're pushing it off, push it off to Erev Pesach. So the Noi Behuda is very upset about this. He says, number one, it's the lack of Zrizus, clearly. But more than that, you're being mavatal the mitzvah. Why? Because it could be that if the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is to be gemalt, every single second that you push off the mitzvah Mila, certainly every day that you push off the mitzvah Mila, you're wasting a mitzvah. If it's just to remove the ha'arah, so then you do it, you don't do it today, you do it tomorrow, you don't do it tomorrow, do it the next day. It's a lack of zrizos. But the Noi Behuda argues that now over here you might have worse. It might be that if you push it off to a Sunday, let's say Mila Shalom Bezman is supposed to be Tuesday, and you push it off to a Sunday, you have been mavatel, the mitzvah of Mila, for those days in the interim, because the child was supposed to be mahul during those days. So that's why I try to make a point of this. People have a Mila Shalom Bezman, that it's not doesn't necessarily mean it's a Sunday bris. Then fortunately, we had a baby boy 3 years ago, around this time, February, and both my sons were Mila Shalom Bezman, they were both born early. So the Mila Shalom Bezman for my other son was great. It was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll get to that story. But my second son, it turned out to be a Sunday. It just happened to be that was the day that the doctor said he'd do the Mila was a Sunday. So the bris was the next Sunday. So I was very upset about it that my Mila Shalom Bezman happened to turn out on a Sunday, because people think anyway you push every Mila Shalom Bezman to a Sunday. But mine was, I'll give a disclaimer, that was actually the first day for the bris, but.
Yeah. Oh,
wouldn't allow it on Sunday. Well, just to make a point.
In all these cases, you have to wait a week after it.
We'll get to it. Look over here, the Gilead Mashon, and some Erech Samach has another case where this issue comes up with regards to two children. We've had this case in the yeshiva once. With regards to two children who need a bris on the same day, one is a Mila Bezmana, one is a Mila Shaloi Bezmana. So which comes first, the Mila Bezmana or the Mila Shaloi Bezmana? So on the one hand, the Gilead Marashah says you should do the Mila Bezmana first, mitzvah chaviva b'shaita. So you should do the mitzvah Bezmana first. That's what the Gilead Marashah paskins, the Mila Bezmana first. The Dvar Avrom disagrees and says, no, you should do the Mila Shaloi Bezmana first. The Mila Bezmana, you have the whole eighth day. The Mila Shaloi Bezmana, every single second it could be you're being mavatu a mitzvah. Once the eighth day has passed, so day nine, every minute that he's not gemalt is already a problem, not of zrizos, but of bitul of the mitzvah. So he claimed the Mila Shaloi Bezmana is only an issue of zrizos. So fine. But the Mila Shaloi Bezmana, every single second, you're missing out on the mitzvah of Mila, so he claimed you should do the Mila Shaloi Bezmana first. Either way, if you have a Mila Shaloi Bezmana, we're going to get to right now, sometimes you have to wait 7 days, Meyes Liyeh, so if the doctor tells you at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, now your child is fit for Mila, and you have to wait 7 24-hour periods, it could turn out that the Mila is supposed to be done at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Nonetheless, you don't, you know, you can wait for people to arrive, you don't have to... I've gotten calls like this, you know. Oh, but it's 3 o'clock. You got to do it right. So yes, you got to do it after 3 o'clock. You wouldn't wait till the next day, but we don't assume like you know, get crazy about this Dvar Avram. But the Dvar Avram's argument has a lot of. We can understand where he's coming from. Once it's a mila shaloi bezmana, perhaps every single minute that you're wasting is already a bittul of the mitzvah.
What was the story with 5 o'clock?
With who?
With 5. You said 5 o'clock.
Oh, I'll get to right now. Oh yeah, mine. Mine was 5. My first son, the doctor said, because it was antibiotics that he had. We had to finish, so it was finished at whatever 5 o'clock. So we made a bris in the afternoon, whatever, and it was like a Tuesday, whatever. 6 right before mincha, made a bris, fleishig bris. Okay, look over here. Reis samach beis, expensive bris. Reis samach beis. Sif Aleph is where the Shulchan Aruch has, oh right here, is where the Shulchan Aruch has this discussion about a child who's not well who gets better, which we just talked about in the Taz. So the Shulchan Aruch distinguishes, Reish Samach Beis Sif Beis, between two types of illnesses that the child could have. There's a Chayli Shebechol Aguf, where you have to wait 7 days, Mi'eis Li'eis, from when the child gets better. Once the child gets better, you got to wait 7 24-hour periods till you do the Mila. And then there's a choyli that's not b'chol aguf. There, once the child gets better, you can do the bris right away. What's called a choyli shebechol aguf? What's called a choyli sheloi b'chol aguf? So the Maharik writes in a tshuva that if it's a suffix sakana, then it's a choyli shebechol aguf. We know what a suffix sakana is from last section. If it's not a suffix sakana, so then it's called it's a choyli that's not b'chol aguf. Once the child gets better, already you can do the bris right away. So he says if the child is bitsar, but it's not a choyli. So the Shach also quotes like this over here, that if the child is bitsar, so Shach says if the child is bitsar, you shouldn't do the bris, you should delay. You don't have to wait 7 days, mi'es li'es, but if the child is bitsar, you should delay the bris. So I think, the point is, you have to distinguish, it can't be a child is a diaper rash, so he's bitsar, so then we wouldn't do a bris. It has to be something that's significant, tsar, not a chayli shi'esh b'sakana, but significant tsar, then we would push off the bris. And you could do it right away when the child gets better. If it was a suffix sakana, you have to wait 7 days, mi'eis li'eis. This idea of waiting 7 days, mi'eis li'eis, the Binyan Tzion writes, is the same author as the Aruch Lener, writes in his Shuvas that this is an inyan midairaisa. And if you do it before the 7 days, mi'eis li'eis, perhaps you require a tofes dam bris afterwards. You're not yoytze the mitzvah mila. I believe every Tendler also espoused that shita. That this shir of 7 days, mi'eis li'eis, is midairaisa. The Nishmas Avram, though, quotes from Shlomo Zalman that it's not Doiraisa. It's Shir Midrabanan, and that's Rav HaPaiskim, Rav Shefta. Most Paiskim are of the opinion that this is only a Shir Midrabanan. If you do it within this Shir, you are Yaitse, the Mitzvah Mil, you don't need a Tavis Dam Bris. What?
Even if it's Doiraisa, you can still.
It's a discussion whether we need HaTavis Dam Bris. Like a Mila Taiches, yes, we'll get there in a second. But most assume that it's not a Shir Midrash, it's a Shir Midrabanan. But there are certain cases, so we generally know what's considered a Chayli Shebechol Aguf, what's called the Suffix Akana, what's not called the Suffix Akana, but there are certain issues that come up specifically with regards to babies and Mila that are somewhat gray areas. For example, Ramesh has a tshuva, I believe every Talmud mentions it, if a child is less than the optimal weight, most Mailim have a Kabbalah that they will not do Mila if the child is less than 5 pounds. Some Mailim a little less, some Mailim will wait till the child is gaining a certain amount, a rate of gaining weight, doesn't necessarily have to be 5 pounds, but they have rules about how heavy the child is and how much weight it's gaining. So Moshe writes that that's not a Chayli Shebechol Aguf. If the child is not gaining weight, is not fat enough for the Mail to do Mila. Once he gets to the right amount of weight, you don't have to delay the bris 7 days, Mi'es Li'es. But at the same time, if you have a child who can't eat, let's say some children can't suck. Premature babies can't suck. They have to feed them through a tube. So then everyone agrees that's a chayli shebechol aguf, and you'd have to wait 7 days mi'eis li'eis from the time that the child can eat. So that's you know, it can suck on his own. It doesn't mean he can sit there with a fork and a knife. It means he can suck on his own. Then the child is well, and now you can wait 7 days mi'eis li'eis to do the bris. Or another case, which is a grayer area, is if let's say they put the child in an incubator. Sometimes parents leave their baby in the nursery and they come back and all of a sudden the child is in an incubator. I'm like, what happened? So generally the reason why they put the child in the incubator is because it can't control its own body temperature, so it keeps the child warm. That could sometimes be a chayli shebechol aguf. Why can't the child control his own body temperature? Sometimes they put the child in the incubator because they had no other place to put the child and there were no beds left. So that doesn't mean that it's a chaylish of a chalaguf. So you have to ask. Or sometimes it's just convenient if, let's say, there's some instrument over there that they're doing with the child, so it's just easy to hang it from the incubator. So you have to find out why they're putting the child in the incubator, and it depends. Sometimes it will be a chaylish of a chalaguf, sometimes not. If a child has a fever, so the Nishmas Avram writes, if it's more than, someone told me that this is the policy in all hospitals, I don't know that, but if it's 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is some round number, I hope, Celsius, but it's 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, so then already it's a Chalish HaBachol HaGuf. You have to wait 7 days, Mi'es Li'es. 100.4 is something Celsius. So 100.4 Fahrenheit, that's already a chayli shebechol aguf. Less than that is not a chayli shebechol aguf. So again, a big nafkamina with regards to which day should you do the bris. Antibiotics, we mentioned when it comes to Shabbos, infection is a chayli shebechol aguf. But here there's an interesting machlekes, which I discovered between Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Shechter. Shlomo Zalman's opinion is, this is quoted by Dr. Abraham, that you don't have to wait 7 days, meyes liyes, from the time that the antibiotics are over. You have to wait 7 days, meyes liyes, from the time that the child is no longer symptomatic. You know, if you have an ear infection or you have something that you take, a strep throat, you take antibiotics for a whole regimen, but you already start to feel better by day three or day four. So there was Shomaz Alman Health, you have to wait 7 days, meyes liyes, from the time that you feel better. If Shechel's opinion was you should wait 7 days, meyes liyes, from the time that you finish the antibiotic, which could be a big difference. But at the same time, sometimes they give, and this Dr. Abraham has a suffix about, sometimes they give antibiotics prophylactically, meaning just as a precaution. They don't know that the child has any infection. It's not worth it to do the blood test. They just give the child antibiotics. So then already it's a suffix. Dr. Abraham's not sure if we should consider that we have to count 7 days, meyes liyes, from the time of the antibiotic. If the child was never sick, they just did it as a to prevent the possibility of it, or maybe there was an infection there, but we don't know that there was. Do we have to now wait 7 days, meyes liyes, from the time of the antibiotic? All these cases come up. You should consult with the mayo, with the doctor, and figure something out. The Shulchan Aruch over here in Siman Reish Samech Gimel discusses the status of the child, which is Yarok, the Tinok HaYarok, the Yarok baby. What color is Yarok? Yarok doesn't mean green. The child is green, then you have a big problem. The Gemara also says, Esther, you're rock Isa. Everybody by Purim time. Esther was not green. I always say, what was she, Kermit? It doesn't make sense. Esther was green. Esther was not green. The Gemara points out what it means is Esther was tan, was Zahav. Now it makes sense. The Gemara is praising Esther was so beautiful that she was Yerakrak. She was tan. How does he know? Because the Gemara quotes a contradiction between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, between the Bavli and the Zohar. The Bavli says that an Esrog, which is Yarok Kekarsi, is Posel. If it's green like leeks, then it's Posel. And the Zohar says, no, an Esrog HaYarok is Mahudar. That's why some people who follow the Zohar get Dafka green Esrog. Because the Zohar says an Esrog HaYarok is Mahudar. So the Gra asks, but 1 minute, then it's a contradiction between the Bavli and the Zohar. And the Gra claims there's never a contradiction between the Nister and the Nigla. So the Gra says, no, that an Esrog HaYarok Kekarsi, that's green. Yarok means yellow. Now we understand. The Zohar says that Esrog, which is tan, which is yellow, so then that's Mahudar. So to over here, what it means when it says that Tinok HaYarok doesn't mean green, it means that the Tinok is yellow. Why would the child have a yellowish tint to his skin? So that's because he's not processing, Rabbi Tendler explained at length, that it is not my Matzias, this is all from Rabbi Tendler, that it's not processing the bilirubin properly. That's because the liver is not functioning properly. But Rabbi Tendler made a big point of saying that there's two types of reasons why a child might not be processing bilirubin properly. One is because it's pathological, because there's a problem with the liver. And then there's another reason why the child might not be processing bilirubin is because the liver never kicks in until the fifth day. That's what Rabbi Tendler said. That it only, so every child is somewhat jaundiced the first few days of life. And then it goes down. So Rabbi Tendler tried to make the big argument that it should depend. If a child is jaundiced because of physiological reasons, just the liver hasn't kicked in yet, then it's a normal. So then you should do the bris. It shouldn't depend on what the bilirubin is. Shouldn't be that if there's a bilirubin above 12, then you push off the bris. If not, then you don't push off the bris. So Rabbi Tendler claims it should depend on whether it's pathological or physiological. If it's physiological, you should never push off the bris. The child is fine, just the liver function hasn't kicked in yet. Or kicked in a little late, day five, so the child basically is fine. then you should do a bris even if it's above 12. And if the child is pathologically sick, meaning there's a problem with the liver, then every time they're claiming, so then you can't do the bris even once it dips below 12. The child has a problem with his liver, you have to wait 7 days, meyes liyes. The problem is, with Rabbi Tendler's pshat, my predecessor, Rabbi Haber, used to always, every year, make a ceremony pointing this out to Rabbi Tendler. I already gave up on that. But over here, in some of Reish Samuel Gimel Siv Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch distinguishes, and he says that a katan hayarik, sometimes you could do the bris, where is this? Yeah. If sometime, when it returns to normal, I'm sorry, katan hayarik, when it returns to normal, you do the bris. So according to the Tendler, karet doesn't correspond to anything. If the child is physiologically, it's not processing bilirubin because of a physiological reason, hasn't developed yet, or kicked in late, you should do the bris now. And if it's pathological, so then you have to wait 7 days miyes liyes. So why does the Shulchan Aruch say, katan shu yaruk, you wait till it returns to normal, then you do the bris right away, it doesn't correspond to anything according to Rabbi Tendler. Either you should do the bris anyway, or pathologically, is a pathological problem, in which case you have to wait 7 days miyes liyes. So that's why Rabbi Tendler's pshat is a little bit difficult to fit into the Shulchan Aruch. Rav HaPaiskim's opinion is to follow...
Does he answer it?
I don't know, you could ask him. I haven't asked him in years. If you like doing it, you're so brave, you can do it. Rav HaPaiskim, though, Shulman Zalman, Sitz Eliezer, all of them, distinguish between if the bilirubin level is very high, I don't know, they give different numbers. If it's very high, so then 7 days miyes liyes. If it's a little bit elevated level bilirubin, for whatever reason, physiological, pathological, they don't really distinguish, then you should push it off until it returns to normal, then you can do the bris. There is, though, somewhat of a distinction within the paiskim between, do you actually have to wait till it to dip, let's say, below 12? Let's say that would be normal. Do you actually have to wait to dip below 12? Till the child is no longer jaundiced at all? Or once it starts going down and we see that the liver is functioning properly, now already you can do the bris once it starts going down. So there, I would say, Rosh Hashanah Zalman, I think Amnei Tzitz Eliezer, both all say, once it starts going down, and it's getting close to normal, you can already do the bris now because we see that the liver is kicked in and things are going to return to normal. But others, Rabbi Yashiv, Dayan Wise, Minchas Yitzchak, Rabbi Bleich, has an article in the Contemporary Halachic Problems where he also argues like this, that no, says in the Shulchan Aruch, you got to wait till it returns to normal. So even though it's going down and we see that the liver function is kicking in, you still got to wait for the color to return to normal in order to do a bris. I haven't defined Rabbi Tendler's argument, I'm not appealing, that we should... Why should we push to do a bris right away, you know, kind of make a point that it's physiological jaundice as opposed to pathological jaundice and to do the bris if the Moelim are hesitant to do the bris? I don't really hear it because of a different argument. The Rambam writes over here in Simei Reish, it's quoted, in the Shulchan Aruch in Simei Reish, Samuel Gimel, Sif Aleph, that whenever you encounter a suffix sakana when it comes to a bris, you push it off. It's Tzarech Lizayir Ma'oid Be'elu Hadorim. You have to be very careful when it comes to these things. She'ein malin v'lad she'yesh v'chashash chayli, d'sakonis nefoshes, d'echa zakol. Any chashash chayli, you push it off. Why? She'ef shelo lima lachar zman. You can do the mila later on. It could be the Rabban Mushitasa, that the mitzvah mila is just to remove the ahar. So you should push it off, you can do it later on. V'ef shelo hachzer nefesh zachas mi'yisrael. But if you make a mistake and you do it early, you can't return. And it could be also, we mentioned the svara when we learned Hilchas Pikuach Nefesh, that Mila is already a Sakanas Nefashos. The child is already in a precarious situation, a life-threatening situation. So whenever you're dealing with someone who's already in a precarious situation, a life-threatening situation, we start being chayshish, we start worrying about things even if they're far-fetched. We mentioned this svara when it comes to Shai Tzarochov of a chayla. That once a person is a chayla sheyesh b'sakana, even far-fetched things, moving the bed, getting the guy another pillow, will be mechal Shabbos for, because it might affect the status of the chayli. So to be here, mila itself is a sakanas nefashos. So the child is a little bit yellow. Who wants to start taking chances already with doing the bris? So better to push it off. Why don't we have to make a point that this jaundice thing? If the male doesn't want to do the bris, I would push it off. The Shulchan Aruch over here in Simei Reish Samuel Gimel Sif Beis discusses a child... who is a brother? Two brothers who already were Mesu Machmas Mila. Two brothers, I think they're brothers from the father's side, that they were Mesu Machmas Mila. What do you do with the third son? So I think the Shulchan Aruch says you should wait. Achi is Gado v'ischazek Karcha, and then you do Mila. You should wait till he grows up and he gets strong, and then do Mila. So the Pischei Tshuva calls him the Noi to be a Pischei Tshuva Sifka in Hay. quotes from the Noi of Yehuda that this is the opinion of the Rambam. The Gemara just says the third son, you don't do Mila. The Rambam adds, you know what, don't do Mila right away, but when he gets older, do Mila. So the Noi of Yehuda says, maybe you shouldn't do Mila at all. Who said once he grows up and gets stronger, we should do Mila? The Gemara says, once the first two children die because of Mila, you don't do Mila on the third son. See, Noi of Yehuda says, Iya Yashar Cheli, if he could, he would be Mavato this Psak. Not like the Rambam. You should never do Mila on the third son. And then I think the Pisrei Tshuva, yeah, distinguishes between, you look over there, Pisrei Tshuva. Anyway, but the Noi of Yehuda disagrees with the Rambam. What does this case correspond to in modern medicine? So it's generally assumed that it corresponds to some sort of hemophilia. That the first two children died because of hemophilia, which makes the Rambam's position really difficult to understand. Because then the guy is a hemophilia, makes no big difference how big he is and how tall he is. If he's a hemophiliac, it's always going to be a problem.
Once he's older, he would have gotten some cut at some point.
Okay. So then it's not hemophilia, as they're saying, Gupshan and Rambam.
No,
Pashup Shad is it doesn't correspond to hemophilia, because hemophilia runs on the mother's side. It's a Y chromosome.
Maybe his brother's had hemophilia, but the fact that he hasn't died.
Can that happen?
Doesn't the Shulchan Aruch say the mother?
No, he says the father.
Isn't there a Shad like
that? Yishe Shemala Benar Rishon. That's from the mother. He says either way. Oh, and then the Ramah says no, it's only by the man, by the woman, not by the man. So according to Ramah, seems to be sensitive to this. That, hello, this is hemophilia. Yeah, what's he saying? Fisha dam bam in Oisha. That's the Gemara Nida. That's Gemara Nida. But here the Rama says it's only by the mother, so that would make sense with hemophilia. According to the Shulchan Aruch, that it's even by the father, so then even by the same father with different mothers, it's hard to say it's hemophilia. What is the story with hemophilia? I don't think we're telling. Did he mention it this year, the hemophilia story? No. So he used to talk about it. He used to say he had an Ashir, a Talmud, who was a hemophiliac, and he went through the whole story. So what do you do if you have a child who's a hemophiliac? So I think in the Nishmas Avram, he quotes from Rabbi Neuwirth, that what can they do? Well, you have to risk his life? No. What you can do is you can give the child an injection. The reason why a child is a hemophiliac is because he's missing one of the clotting factors. So they can give you an injection with a clotting factor, and the blood will clot for a specific period of time. I don't know how long it lasts for, but it will last for a little bit of time. That's why I think hemophilics walk around with an EpiPen, with that with that factor, and if they get a bruise or a cut, they inject themselves with the EpiPen, and then the blood will clot. So you can do this for the child, too, and do the mitzvah of milah. So Rabbi Neuwirth claims they're not obligated to do that. The child is a chayla sheyesh bo sakana. Well, he's not obligated to take this injection and do the mitzvah of milah. And Rav Shlomo Zalman, I think, disagreed. And he said, once the child takes the injection, he's no longer a chayla, because now his blood clots, and he would be obligated to take the injection and then do the mitzvah mila. Rabbi Bleich discusses in the Contemporary Halachic Problems, one of the newer volumes, perhaps doing mila with lasers, because there the blood doesn't have to clot, the heat from the laser clots the blood. So maybe you could do that with the hemophiliac, a whole discussion over there. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos, this is the next topic over here in Simei Reish Samech Gimel, the Gemara Maseches Shabbos discusses what is the status of a child who's born without an Or HaArla. He's no and moho. Does he require hatofes dambris or does he not require hatofes dambris? So the Gemara says this depends on the shaila of what is the story with this child who's born without a mila, no and moho? Is it the fact that he doesn't have an arha'arla, in which case what do you gain by doing hatofes dambris? Or no, perhaps the pshat is that the child who's born without an arha'arla, it's not that he doesn't have an arla, there is an arla there, it's just, don't ask me what this means, but it's an arla kvusha. It's a suppressed, hidden arla somewhere over there. There's a hidden arla, and the hatavas dambris removes the arla kvusha, as the Gemara says. And then the Gemara says, if it is, it's a suffix in the Gemara. What's the status of Noel Moho? Is it that he doesn't have an arla, or he has an arla kvusha, and by doing hatavas dambris, you remove the arla kvusha? Then the Gemara has a suffix. If it is atzad that there's an arla kvusha, is it a vaday arla kvusha? Or is it a suffix arla kvusha? Does he really for sure have, if there is an arla kvusha, is it a vade arla kvusha? Or is it a suffix arla kvusha? What's the nafkamina? Nafkamina will be, is it daicha Shabbos? If it's a vade arla kvusha, there is a suppressed arla, then the mila, the hatavas dambris will be daicha Shabbos. If it's a suffix arla kvusha, it would not be daicha Shabbos. So So in the Shulchan Aruch, we paskin some Reish Samei Gimel Sif Dalet that the Noilad Mohu requires Hatafis Dambris, meaning there is a Chashash over here of Arla Kvusha, but it's not Deicha Shabbos. Some Reish Samei Kvav Sif Yud, the Shulchan Aruch tells you, it's not Deicha Shabbos. So it sounds like we paskin in that whole discussion over there that there is an Arla Kvusha, but it's only a Suffolk Arla Kvusha. The Mishkan is Yaakov, though, over here, Sif Kat in Yud, this is one of the most important Pisrei Tshuvas, even though it's only five words. The Mishkan is Yaakov over here in Sifkat in Yud says, I am Chuvas Mishkan is Yaakov. That's it.
What sentence is
this? Sifkat in Yud, Reish Samach Gimel Sifkat in Yud. So we said, a Noilad Mohu requires Hatafas Dambris. It's a Suffolk Arla Kvusha, so that's why you have to do Hatafas Dambris. Maybe there's a suppressed Arla there, and the Hatafas Dambris will remove it. So Mishkan is Yaakov over there, and that Chuvah quotes the Stira in the Rambam. The Rambam paskins that the Noilad Mohu requires Hatafas Dambris, which sounds like he is an Orel. There's an Arla Kvusha. But at the same time, the Rambam paskins that a Noilad Mohu can eat Truma. If he's an Orel, how can he eat Truma? That's the Mishkan is Yaakov's count. So Mishkan is Yaakov has this answer, but the answer is really explained more fully by Reb Chaim. It's also in Zecher Yitzchak from Yitzchak Lepanovicher, that they claim within the Rambam that at some point in the discussion in the Gemara abandoned the whole svar of the Arla Kvusha. That the Noilad Mohu requires Hatafas Dambris is not because there's a hidden Arla there, a suppressed Arla, and the Hatafas Dambris removes the suppressed Arla. No, it's because there is a unique, independent mitzvah, a third wheel in the mitzvah of Mila, Mila, Priya, and a mitzvah of Hatafas Dambris. And even though the child is born without an Arha Arla, he's born without an Arha Priya, he still could be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Hatafas Dambris. And that mitzvah is not Deicha Shabbos. That's why the Rambam feels he can eat Truma. He's not an Orel. There's no fear of an Arla Kvusha. And they prove this from the fact that the Gemara continues on and has the same discussion with of the Noilad Mohu with regards to a Gershon Izgayer who had Mila while he was a Goy. Guy converts and he had Mila, circumcision in a hospital while he was a Goy. Now he converts. So the Gemara says he also requires a Tafas Dabris. Well, we know he had an Arla. We know exactly where it is. It was left in the hospital years ago. So why does he need a Tafas Dabris? There's no Arla Kvusha. So it must be, says the Mishkan is Yaakov and Reb Chaim, that is because there's a third mitzvah of Mila, and that's the Tafas Dambris. And even though the guy removed Arha Arla, removed Arha Priya when he was a Nachri, he could still fulfill the mitzvah of Tafas Dambris now. And that mitzvah of Tafas Dambris is not Deicha Shabbos. It's a unique mitzvah, an independent mitzvah, and the halacha is not because it's a Suffolk Arla Kvusha, it's not Deicha Shabbos, because the mitzvah of Tafas Dambris alone is not Deicha Shabbos. Just like the Shulchan Aruch says in Simei Reish Samei Chesed Gimel, that there's no bracha on Tafas Dambris. Tafas Dambris doesn't get a bracha. It's a third independent mitzvah, Mila, third part, and it doesn't get a bracha, and it's not Deicha Shabbos. But that doesn't mean that it's not an integral part of the mitzvah of Mila. That's why Rav HaPoiskim were opposed at the time. It was a big issue in the Sefer HaBris, he recalls the whole history of it, that they were opposed to the clamp. Because the clamp cuts off blood circulation, every time they described it, the details of it. The clamp cuts off the circulation to the Arha Arla, and then after a certain period of time, like 20, 30, 40 minutes, whatever, then the skin adheres to the skin, and you have bloodless Mila. So Rav HaPoiskim were opposed to that because it's you need the blood. Why do you need the blood? Because that's part of the mitzvah of Hatafas Dambris. It's a third wheel, a third integral part of the mitzvah of Mila, not only Mila, Priya, but also Hatafas Dambris. So Moshe is not sure if you did the Mila with a clamp, perhaps you would require even Hatafas Dambris afterwards. You'd say anything. So it's not a good Mila, and perhaps you require Hatafas Dambris afterwards.
Well, if you say Hatafas Dambris is a third part of the mitzvah.
So then you gain it in.
But he's still not an RL. If you use a clamp, right? If you say it like this.
Not an RL. Yes.
So it's not that you didn't do the mitzvah. You didn't do the full mitzvah of Mila, but it's not that.
He wouldn't be an RL. He didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Mila, but you. Oh, you.
So
he doesn't have to get parties
anymore?
No. When we get to Hatafas Dambris, we'll talk about it. We're almost there. This issue, though, the Reb Chaim with the Mishkan is Yaakov's pshat, and why we do Hatafas Dambris. The Gemara seems to say we do Hatafas Dambris to remove a suppressed Arla. So Reb Mishkan is Yaakov claims the Gemara went away from that. We abandoned that idea, and we moved over to the idea that it's part of the mitzvah of Mila to have Dambris. And that's why we do it on the Noilad Mohu and the Gershon Izgayer when he had a Mila. This issue, though, is relevant to what is Hatafas Dambris. So the Meiri says, what is Hatafas Dambris? Is removing the whole upper layer of skin over the Atara. Whoa, whoa. And he proves this from the Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos in the Perek Balaz Demila that one of the Amoraim made his son a Krus Shavcha by doing Hatavis Damris, which sounds like it's a heavy duty procedure. He made the child into a Krus Shavcha. There is a rule, right? No, none of this. You don't have to remove the whole upper layer of skin. It's just to be mozi a little bit of dam. Okay, fine. So it's to be mozi one drop of blood. Where are you supposed to be mozi the drop of blood from? So the Sefer HaBris and the Eitzer HaBris quote that this is a big machlekes ha'poskim. Some say it's from where the Or Ha'Ola attached to the top of the gid. That's where you take the drop of blood from. From where the Or Ha'Ola, meaning from where the blood would have come from. Where would the blood come from during the Mila? Not from the top of the Atar, it would come from where the skin was attached to the gid. So that's where you should do Atavas Dabris. And the other opinion in poskim is you should take it from the top of the Atar. That was where the Arla was. That seems to represent the idea you're looking for some Arla Kvusha. So you do it on top of the Atar where the Arla would have rested. Or no, perhaps it's because it's a unique mitzvah Atavas Dabris, and therefore you should take the blood out. When you do Atavas Dabris, you should take it out from where the blood would have come from if you had done a bris. I can't tell you what is the psak by most ma'alim. I've only been to one Atavas Dabris, and I already blocked it out of my mind. It was for a Geirus. I forgot already what happened over there. But some do it. I think some do it in one place. Some do it from the Atara. Some do it from where the Arla would have attached to the Makam Hamila, representing both these two ideas. Some say suggest the Sefer Bris calls like that idea. One to do in both places. But it takes 1 second. They don't. Then you're making a chabur shaloi letzarech. You're being chayvo bechaver. Shalom. So over here, the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so that's the story of the Atavas Dabris. Huh?
Meaning, if you want to make sure
that you're yotzi. Okay, so then it's not chayvo shaloi letzarech. Shulchan Aruch over here in Simen Reish. I think we were in Simen Reish Samach Beis somewhere. But the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Reish Samach Beis. We were. That was in Sif Beis with the Atavas Dabris. Shulchan Aruch and Simen Reish Samach Beis Sif Aleph begins that the mitzvah of Mila is a mitzvah shebiyoyim, because the pasuk says uvayoyim hashmini yimo b'sar alosa, on the day of the eighth day. And any mitzvah that's during the day, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Megillah begins at Hanetzach Hama b'di Eved. You can do it from the time of Alois Hashachar, but really supposed to be from Hanetzach Hama. So the Ramah is b'di Eved Mishaala Amud Hashachar Yotza. But the Paiskim say you really shouldn't do a bris after, you know, sometimes it becomes convenient. In the wintertime, it's easier to do a bris early before an Eitz HaChama. You're not supposed to do that. The bris is supposed to take place after an Eitz HaChama L'chadchila. L'chadchila, though, once an Eitz HaChama comes, it's an Indian of Zrizah Magdimah L'mitzvahs, which is particularly relevant to the mitzvah of Mila, because the Pasuk says, the whole idea of Zrizah is learned out by Avram Avinu, Vayashkim Avram Babayker. Avram got up early in the morning to do the mitzvah milah. So you're supposed to do, that was I think by the Akedah Yitzchak, but Avram Avinu got up early in the morning to, he was Zariz. So too the whole idea of Zrizus is very relevant to the mitzvah of milah. But what happens often is you should do the mitzvah of milah, you have your minion early as possible, right after an Eitz HaChama. But let's say if you do it right after an Eitz HaChama, no one's going to be there. People can't, it's a Sunday. You do it after an Eitz HaChama, and the Eitz HaChama is 6:45, you're not going to have anybody at your bris. So what should, so there's an Indian of Beroivam Hadras Melech. So what should you do? Which takes precedence? Zrizus or Beroivam? Shaila and Kol Tarkula. What takes precedence? Zrizus or Beroivam? The Ber Hetev has a Machlekes Achrayim about that. What takes precedence? Zrizus or Beroivam? And it comes up a lot of times by a bris. What's the issue? Because the Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that we blow to Kiyah Shofar and Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, not in Shachris, because of Exeras HaMelech. There was one time they decreed you're not allowed to blow to Kiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So because of that, they didn't do it during Shachris, they did it during Musaf. But it sounds like otherwise we would have done it during Shachris. Why should we do it during Shachris? Because of Zrizah Magdimah L'mitzvahs. Oh, but if you...
We were starting Melchama?
No, that was the reason. I think it's because it was one time Gzeira against it.
I thought it was meaning that...
They were afraid we were going to... That is correct. There was Gzeira against it because they thought we were rounding up troops to wage a coup. That was what the Shofar was. Like, hey, everybody get together, because we're going to wage a coup. So because of that, they made Gzeiras HaMelech against it. So they did it during Musaf. But it sounds like from the Gemara, were it not for that fact that there was Gzeira against it, we would have done it during Shacharis. Oh, but we all know that there's more people by Musaf than by Shacharis. For whatever reason, I don't know, but there's more people by Musaf than by Shacharis. So we should have done it by Musaf anyway, because of Beroi Vam. Why are we doing it during Shacharis? Because of Zrizus. So you see, Zrizus takes precedence over Beroi Vam. And the Chacham Tzvi says, no, who knows? I don't know if people will come later for Musaf. Maybe not. Rosh Hashanah, at least. Maybe everyone comes on time. So he says, who necessarily says it? There'll be more people there by Musaf. So maybe Bereivam takes precedence over Zrizus. So that's this shal over here. And then you have to weigh the options when you're making a bris, these two options, Zrizim and Magdima, and also Bereivam. In the Tshuvas van Hoggis from Sternbach, he quotes from the Chazon Ish that you can do this Bereivam story to push off Zrizus until 9 o'clock. After 9 o'clock, then Zrizus is over. That's what he says. The Pisrei Tshuva goes even further. Pisrei Tshuva says in Simen Reish, Samuk Beis, Yivkon Beis over here that on a Shabbos bris, you do the bris after all of davening. So a lot of times you have long chazanim and things like that, and you start at 9 o'clock, and you have a long chazanim and everything. It could last till after chatzos. So over here in the Sivkotin Beis, he quotes from the Achrayim. He quotes from, I think, from the Shvus Yaakov that after chatzos you've already been mavatol Zrizus. There's no more. I mean, it's not even biker anymore. It's not by Yashkim Avim but biker. It's over. Biker is over. So he says that's really terrible. So they, okay, so maybe after 9 o'clock, maybe after Chatzos. The Eitz HaBris says, I think it's not even Boker anymore, once it gets to past Chatzos. So maybe past Chatzos, past 9 o'clock, these type of things shouldn't be doing. I mean, you can start the minion at 9 o'clock.
Shermer says 9 o'clock because that's his take on what...
Already, he says that's not even...
Is he aiming for...
It's a line in the sand.
He's not aiming for Dalet Shavos to try and...
Really? I don't know. I have to look it up again. We have to look it up. Also over here, Simereish Samuk Beis Sif Aleph says that the Mila has to be done again during the day and also on the eighth day. Let's say you didn't follow one of these prescriptions. You did it either at night or you did it before the eighth day. What's the story then? So the Ramah distinguishes. He says if you do Mila at night, you need Hatafas Dambris. If you did it Taiches, no Hatafas Dambris. So Shach distinguishes, Shach is Chaylik. He says, why should there be a difference? So he says, you always require a Tavis Dambris. At night, Taiches, always a Tavis Dambris. And then the Pisrei Tshuva over here quotes from the Shagas Aryeh that there's never a Tavis Dambris. What are you getting by the Tavis Dambris anymore? The meal is over. You did it wrong. There's no do-over. There's no mulligan over here. You did it wrong. So okay, you're over. Forget it. Meal is over. There's an idea of having a Tavis Dambris at the time of meal. What are you getting by a Tavis Dambris for a meal that was done wrong? So every time there's a meal that's done improperly, the Shagas Aryeh is going to pop up and say, no more Hatovas Dambris, the meal is over. It's you can't fix the situation. So Amar distinguishes between Taiches and at night. The Shach says we shouldn't distinguish and show this to the Shagas Aryeh, but in different directions. Shach says you always require Hatovas Dambris, and the Shagas Aryeh says you never require Hatovas Dambris. But what's the pshat in the Ramah? That at night, he says, you do need Hatovas Dambris. If you do a Taiches, you don't need Hatovas Dambris. So here, Reb Chaim plugs in his pshat by Hatovas Dambris. The Stipler has it also. The Debrei Yecheskel has this in his sefer. That is because the Ramah is discussing the unique mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris. It's a third integral part of the mitzvah Mila. So he says, even though you messed up the Mila, you can still chop a rind on the mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris. But the mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris, he says, there we should distinguish between earlier than the eighth day. He said, just because Mila has to wait till day eight doesn't necessarily mean that the mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris has to wait till day eight. Maybe the mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris you could do before day eight. So if you did it earlier than day eight, true, you messed up the Mila and you can't fix that part. But the mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris, you were Yotzei, so you don't need to do Hatovas Dambris later. But if you did it at night, so then the mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris can't be done at night, just like the mitzvah of Mila can't be done at night. So if you did it at night, you would require Hatovas Dambris. So it could be that this has to do more not with a meal that was done incorrectly, but it has to do more with this unique individual or independent mitzvah of Hatovas Dambris. Perhaps it's kosher taiches, but it's pasul balayla. Anyway, that's the story of doing a taiches or doing it at night. The Shulchan Aruch over here also, all Sif Aleph and Reish Samach Beis, also discusses what about who is kosher to do. No, is this over here? No. Sorry, that's Simen Reish Samach Beis. Simen Reish Samach Gimel is with the child that's not sick. We did that already. Simen Reish Samach Dalet, yes, is who is kosher to do the mitzvah mila. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Hakol Ksherim Limoil. Even a woman doing mitzvah mila is a discussion in the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah, because the Gemara has two reasons why a Nachri is pasul. Nachri is no good for the mitzvah mila. But the Gemara has two reasons why that's so. Either it's because the pasuk says, Va'atas Bishi Tishmar, that you have to be a Ben Bris in order to perform the mitzvah mila, and a nachri is not a ben bris, or it's because the pasuk says himo imo, and so you have to be a bar mila, you have to be one who is shayach to the mitzvah mila, in order to perform the mitzvah mila, and a nachri is not a bar mila. So either for one of two reasons, a nachri is no good: either because he's not a bar bris, he's not included in the covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or because he is not a bar milah. He's not included in the mitzvah milah. So Gemara says it would be a nafkamina for women between these two reasons as to why a nachri is possible. Nachri for sure is possible for one of these two reasons, a nafkamina between the two with regards to women. So Gemara distinguishes in a way that we intuitively would not have distinguished. The Gemara said, if you had to say women are included of one of them, we would have said they're included in the covenant, but not included in milah. The Gemara says, no, isha keman d'malya damya. And isha is like she has milah, but she's not included in the bris. So Gemara says, and isha is not a bar bris, but she is a bar milah. So be an afkamina between these two reasons, is a woman a kasha to do milah or not a kasha to do milah? The Gemara tries to bring a proof from Tzipora, because Tzipora did the milah on Moshe Rabbeinu's son. But then the Gemara says, nah, maybe she didn't do the milah, maybe someone else did it, she hired somebody, or maybe she started it, or Moshe Rabbeinu finished it. Anyway, you can't bring a raya from Tzipora. So Tarsus there has two opinions, how should we paskin? Like, which reason? Is a woman kasha to do milah, or is a woman not kasha to do milah? The Shulchan Aruch paskins that a woman is kasha to do milah, but she, the Shulchan Aruch also then adds, but Yisrael gado adav mikulon. Gado, v'im yesh Yisrael gado, sh'idei alimo hu kodem lakulon. So Shulchan Aruch says you should use a man preferably. Then the Rama adds, perhaps we should be machmir, a woman shouldn't do milah. V'yesh amin isha lo timo. So he quotes that opinion, a woman shouldn't do milah, v'chein noigim lahadar achar ish. So the minig is to be mahadar till you get a man to do milah. Shouldn't rely on the fact that a woman could do milah. The Sefer HaBris discusses, Rabbi Tanner also discusses, what about if you live in one of these exotic places and you have no milah nearby, but you have a religious or whatever, at least a Jewish female doctor. So can you use a Jewish female doctor? If she's a nachri, it obviously doesn't help. But she's a Jewish female doctor. Can she do the milah? Or should you fly in a man mile? So obviously it's preferable to fly in a male mile. But let's say the male mile won't get there for the milah bismana. He'll get there as a milah shaloi bismana. But the woman will be there for a milah shaloi. She'll be there for the milah bismana. So is a milah bismana with a woman preferable over a milah shaloi bismana with a man? The place can go back and forth about this. I've never heard of it coming up Lamaisa, but every Tamler claims that.
Schechter has this story about that there were people after World War II.
I don't know.
They were stuck in the middle of nowhere, and they asked the Rav what to do, and he said that since the parents were from and he wasn't worried that they would decide not to do milah later, they should just wait 6 months.
Okay.
But that if he would have been worried that they...
Then he would have what?
If he would have been worried that they might not do it later because it'll cause
then
too much shechter,
he would allow a woman to do it.
Well, if she says it,
that's this
child. Oh,
they're saying a better sar.
Why?
Oh, you say, okay. Maybe you should be a rab in one of these exotic places. You're already thinking like a rab in exotic places. We should have a track over here in the Smichel, but rab in exotic places. Okay. What about a nachri? So over here, the Shulchan Aruch says, obviously, a nachri cannot. That was the two reasons why the Gemara brought that he shouldn't do milah. What if he is, the Ramos adds though, if the Nachri does meal, you have to do Hatafas Dam Bris. And again, the Pisrei Tshuva pipes up, no, in the name of the Chagas Aryeh, there's no Hatafas Dam Bris, because it's already over. You can't fix the meal once the guy went bad. Pisrei Tshuva, Sifkan Hey. Once it went bad, you can't fix the meal by doing Hatafas Dam Bris. What about a Mumar? So the Ramos says a Mumar La Relos, if he's an Ariel, or he's a mumah l'chal haShabbos before Hesiyah, l'chal haTurkula, that he's dino ka'akam, he should not do milah. Ramesh even writes, if a mumah l'chal haShabbos before Hesiyah, mumah l'arelos, does milah, you need haTafas Dam Bris. So a Jewish doctor who's a mumah l'arelos, mumah l'chal haShabbos before Hesiyah, is no good according to the Ramah.
Mumah l'arelos means he doesn't have a bris?
Yeah. Or his children don't have a bris. Rabbi Kiva Eger over here, there's a long Rabbi Kiva Eger where he claims that Tosfos sounds like not so against the Rama. That a mumer la relis, mumer la kala tarakula, even if he's dino ka'akum, is kosher to do milah. That's also, and that's how I think the Shevet Alevi has a tshuva, Rav Rosner has a tshuva, we should pass it like Rabbi Kiva Eger. That a mumer la relis can do milah. So again, two opinions. What can you use for the mitzvah milah? That's the next topic over here. Reish Sam of Dalet Sif Beis. So the Shulchan Aruch says, "B'kol malin," even with a tsar, because Tzipora, the pasuk says, did milah with a tsar. She did. She used a rock. Or the pasuk says, "Yeshua did it with a charvois tsurim." Two rocks. Anyway, so you could use milah with anything. If it was a tsar, if it was a chuches, anything that you want. The minig, though, says the Shulchan Aruch, is to use a sakin of barzel, is to use a metal knife. Why is the minig to use a metal knife? So the Aruch HaShulchan over here quotes, it's because the Pasuk says in Sefer Yehoshua that they used charvos tzurim. And he quotes from the Targum Yonason, and that Pasuk in Sefer Yehoshua, that it means that he writes, Izemo Charifin, they used a sharp knife. So right in the times of Yehoshua, you see it. Rav Haigan claims that the tzar that Tzipora used was barzel. Tzar means barzel. But Rav Mendel Kasher has in the Torah Shlema, Rav Shefta likes to quote this, Rav Mendel Kasher has in the Torah Shlema that the reason why we use dafka, a knife of barzel, is because there's lahaytzi midei akaroim. He says you find many things within the Rambam that are lahaytzi midei akaroim. So one of the things is this, because the karoim claim that you have to use scissors, because the pasuk says charvois tzurim, it has to be two blades, scissor action. So therefore, we dafka use a scalpel, a metal knife, to lahaytzi midei akaroim. We do though use Rabbi Tanner, I think, mentioned this, a double-headed knife, scalpel, double-sided scalpel, because the pasuk says charev pifiyos biyadam, but they are supposed to have two blades. So we use a double-headed scalpel, but it's not one metal knife, not a pair of scissors.
Scalpel
is just a sharp knife that's used for medical procedures.
So how's it different than
karam? Karam use scissors.
It's sharp on both sides.
Most malam use a scissor, but that's the probe. That's they use to pull out the harl and the harpriya. They don't actually do mila with that. So what is the mitzvah mila entail? That's simer reish samach dalet siv gimel and siv dalet. What exactly is the mitzvah mila? So the Shulchan Aruch says simply that is to remove the Ar Ha'ara that's Chayfa as Rav Ha'atara, that covers over the majority of the Atara. If you only remove the majority, a minority of the skin that covers Rav of the Atara, that's called Tzitzin HaMa'akim Mesamila. You haven't removed enough skin that now it's Ma'akim the Mitzvah Mila, and you weren't Yaitz in the Mitzvah Mila. If you removed Rav of the skin, that's then the skin that's left, you haven't removed all of it, but you removed Rav of it, then that's called Tzitzin She'ena Ma'akim Mesamila. It's not ma'akiv the mila, you were yoytze, but it's not a mila muhuderes. Mila muhuderes is to remove all of the skin. If rive is left, it's sitzen ma'akvim. If the miut is left, it's sitzen she'ena ma'akvim. Obviously, if you're still doing the mila, you should remove the rest of the skin. But let's say you stop doing the mitzvah of mila. The mila is done, he wraps it up, then he recognizes that there's a piece of skin left. So then, should he go back and remove the rest of the skin? So if it's on Shabbos, then obviously he doesn't go back and remove the rest of the skin. You already yoytze the mitzvah mila. Mila is daif Shabbos. Making a mitzvah, a mila, going back and removing the rest of the skin is not daif Shabbos. So the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, if it's on Shabbos, he should not go back and remove the rest of the skin. Once he see like yodoy, once he removes his hand from the mitzvah mila, he shouldn't go back and remove the rest of the skin. What about during the week? A regular Tuesday, the mayo does a mila, and he recognizes there's a little bit of skin left. So the Gemara says on Shabbos, you don't go back for tzitzin she'ena ma'akim mesamila. What about during the week? Should you go back for tzitzin she'ena ma'akim mesamila? So that's a famous machlekes, Hanukkah time really, between the Tur and the Rambam. The Tur's opinion is that during the week, you should go back for the tzitzin she'ena ma'akim mesamila. Make it a mila muhuderes. Why not? Get rid of all the skin. And the Rambam's opinion is, no, you shouldn't go back and fix the mila even during the week. On Shabbos, you don't go back. And during the week, you don't go back. So Brisker Rav explains in the Sefer on the Rambam and Hilchos Chanukah that the reason why the Rambam feels you shouldn't go back and fix the mila, why is the Rambam opposed to it? Go back and fix the mitzvah mila. The answer is because it won't make it into mila mehuderes. Because the Brisker Rav explains for the Rambam that hidur mitzvah means to do a mitzvah bihiduro, to do the mitzvah in a hidur fashion. It's not an independent concept, hidur mitzvah. So once you were yaitzeh the mitzvah, you removed rive of the ar. Right of the skin that covers the atara, you can't fix it now and make it a mila muhuderes. You'll gain nothing. The mila is done. Hidur mitzvah means to do the mitzvah in a hidur fashion, but here you already did the mitzvah. And the Torah might feel that hidur mitzvah is a separate concept. Either way, that's the machlok between the Rambam and the Torah. They go back during the week to fix a mila, if it's not me'akev. So the Shulchan Aruch over here, I think, passes like the Torah. The Ramah quotes like the Torah. That if it's b'chol l'charchigo, you should go back and take off the rest of the tzitzim. The Ramayim will do that. They'll go back and they'll fix the mila during the week. And the Ramayim will come back the next day and he checks and it's not done properly. Maybe he'll, I've seen Ramayim will fix it. Pisrei Tshuva and Sivka and Tesvav says maybe we should distinguish between a robust child, a healthy child, and a weak child. Maybe you shouldn't go back. Maybe pass like the Rambam. Anyway, that's what the Pisrei Tshuva distinguishes. But what is the Atara? What is considered to be the halachic Atara that you have to remove right of the skin that covers the Atara? So we would say simply, it's the top of the gid. We all know what the Atara is. And that's the opinion of the Rambam. However, the Beis Yosef quotes the Chacham HaSfardi. And the Shach quotes this over here and says, we should pass like the Chacham HaSfardi. The opinion of the Chacham here, the Shach Sivkot and Tes, quotes from the Chacham HaSfardi, whose opinion was that no, the Atara, that you have to remove rib of the skin from it, is the widest part of the tip of the gid. The part that's closest to the body, it gets narrower as it goes away from the body, so the widest part of the Atara, that circumference is the Atara, and you have to remove rib of the skin of that circumference, of the widest part of the tip. In which case, you have a lot less area to work with. So if you have a piece of skin, even though right of the top of the tip of the gid is revealed, but you have skin around that circumference, maybe right, so then that's not called right of the atar for the Chacham HaSfardi. You have to remove right of the skin around that circumference. If Shechler has explained in the past, there could be the argument about two different explanations or two possible meanings of the word atara. Atara could mean a crown, which covers the whole top, or it could mean it's like a wreath. Like a crown that just goes around the circumference. So they're arguing about whether it's just the circumference or it's the whole tip. Either way, the Shach claims we should pass like the Chacham HaSfardi, which is a Chumrah. Then on top of that, there's another Chumrah that's discussed by the Sefer HaBris, is that behind that circumference is a Charitz, which on Rabbi Temler's diagrams is called a Corona, I believe. So behind that circumference is called the Corona, that Charitz. So is that indentation, that charitz, included in the circumference that has to be revealed or not? A machlokes, two opinions within the Achronim that's quoted by the Sefer HaBris. There in the Sefer HaBris, he quotes the Tshuvas of the Binyan Tzi, and he's machmir about this, and he says that one time if Shimshon Rafael Hirsch asked him a shayla about it because he saw someone in the mikvah whose charitz was not nizgale, was covered by the, arla, if you have to reveal that part, so then that skin that covers it is the arla. So he saw the charitz wasn't revealed, and he asked the Binyan Tzion, is that kasha? Binyan Tzion says, no, you have to remove the skin that covers not only that circumference, according to Chacham HaSfardi, but the charitz too. But then the Binyan Tzion says a very important svar, which is very relevant and is important to keep in mind, is that a concept from Hilchos Shechita, which none of you learned. When I was in Smicha, we used to have to learn Hilchos Shechita. So, but one of the most prevalent concepts in Hilchos Shechita is that Roiv Mitzuyin Eitzo Shechita Mumchen Hein. Most of the people who do Shechita know what they're talking about. You don't get involved in Shechita unless you know what you're talking about. So too Mila. Most Moilim, Roiv Mitzuyin Eitzo Mila, says the Binyan Tzion, Mumchen Hein. So he says, don't start second-guessing Milas afterwards. That's what the Binyan Tzion says. If it was done correctly and a legitimate, reputable Moil did it properly, don't start raising shilas about it later. That's what he tells her of Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. He says, just leave it alone. Because Rav Matsuyin Eitzel Mila Munchenheim. But he asked about the halachic shilah, and he felt that the charitz was included within that circumference where the orah had to be removed. Then there's a further chumrah. If you start putting all these chumras together, it's going to get dangerous. But then there's a further chumrah that's quoted over here by the mentioned over here in the Shulchan Aruch. That we didn't get to the Chumrah. There's a sif over here in Shulchan Aruch, Simon Reish, Simon Dalet, Sif Vav, and this happens. About a katan shebesura rachum meduldo, a child who's a chubby baby, who's mesurbo babasar. So what happens sometimes is after a meal was done properly, and it could have been done properly the first time, if the child is very chubby, so then the skin from the gid could creep back over the atara and start to cover the atara again. That's fine, so they move the skin back. The problem is, if it remains like that, and it left like that, so then the skin can become adhered to the Atara. And will start to cover over the Atara, all over again, will become adhered to the Atara. So that's why a Moyo will tell you, a good Moyo will tell you, that if you have a chubby baby, that you should clean it out with alcohol, or with oil, or make sure that you wash it during the bath, or something like that, so the skin doesn't become adhered to the Atara again. If it does become adhered to the Atara again, so then you have a Maris Ayin issue. The meal was done properly, but you have a Maris Ayin issue that the meal wasn't done. So Ramah discusses how much has to be covered over that you have a Maris Ayin issue. So I think the Ramah says, Kotzim Etrumas Hadeshin, if Rav, you don't need Rav of the Atara to be Nizgala. As long as a meal is Nizgala. Ve'en atar shiyah near, we're over here. This as long as a miut, rak miut ha'atar shanim al sagi. As long as a little bit is nizgala, that's okay. The Taz disagrees, the Shach disagrees with him. Back and forth, back and forth. Do you need rav of the atar to be nizgala and not to have a marzain, or miut of the atar not to be nizgala to have a marzain? Anyway, I know fathers who this has happened to. So it could happen. So you should know about it. Anyway, when do you check? At what point do you check whether the atar is covered over? Do you check at the time that the aver is bekishui, or do you check at the time that the aver is not bekishui? It's rafa, as they describe it over here. So at what point do you check the aver to see if the atar is covered over? So I believe over here it says you should check Rayim in Ba'eshim is Kasha near a mohol. Should check when the time of the Aver is Bikishoy. That's when you should check if the Atar is Nizgala. What about, though, again, what Atar are we talking about is also relevant. Does it mean the whole tip, or does it mean the widest circumference with the Charitz? Also could be relevant for this Marasayim. If it means the Charitz with the Atar, with the circumference, that could be covered over very easily. If it means the whole tip, so again, it's something less likely to happen. So, but if it means the circumference, it could be more likely. But you check at the time that the aver is miskash, and not the time the aver is rafa. What about on a regular bris, not for a marasayim? When do you check if you remove the atara or not? Is that at the time the aver is miskasha or not miskasha? So the Shach and Sifkat and Yud Beis quotes a machlekes about this. Here, this Chacham Asfardi says, only over here, with regards to the marasayim, do you check when the time when the aver is miskasha. By a regular bris, it's when it's not bekishoy. And the Shach disagrees with the Chacham Asfardi. He says you always check at the time that the Aver is bekishoy. But according to the Chacham Asfardi, that you don't check at the time that the Aver is bekishoy, again, now he's going to have a big chumrah. It's more likely that it might be covered over. So then, according to, if you put all these chumrah, the Sefer HaBris, who was a mohel, Rabbi Piratinsky, writes, if you put all these chumrahs together, it's going to be dangerous for the child. You can't put all these chumrahs together. If you're going to start saying, the Chacham Asfari, the Atara is the widest circumference, and the Charitz, the indentation, behind the Atara also, behind the Atara also has to be Nisgara. And you're going to check at the time the Aver is not Bekisho, you might remove too much skin. So the Sefer Ebrus says you got to be careful putting all these things together. That's the main mitzvah milos, to remove the arha arla that covers the atara, whatever the atara happens to be. Simen reish samach dalet sif dalet, the Shulchan Aruch also mentions a mitzvah of priya, which underneath the arha arla is a membrane, like a mucus membrane, which is the arha priya. Nowadays, that was a separate milah, a mitzvah. They used to remove the arha arla and then peel back the arha priya. Nowadays, Rabbi Tana mentioned most moilim, with the exception of Chassidus Shemayelim, are Moelin Upolin Berbas Achas. And the Sefer HaBris mentions that there was a precedent for this already in the time of the Rishonim and the Gaonim to do Mila and Priya at the same time, to remove both together. And all of the Achreinim agree that such a practice is valid. Even though it's not what's described in the Shulchan Aruch, such a practice is valid. The Pisrei Tshuva and Sifkat and Yud Gimel discusses, 1 minute, you could peel back the Arha Priya, that's good enough. What about peeling back the Arha Arla? Do you have to remove the Arha Arla? Or is it good enough if you just peel back the Arha Arla? So I think Rabbi Talmud, did he mention it this year? The case of the hypospadia? Sometimes they have to make, if the urinary tract does not end in the right place, sometimes they take the Arha Arla and they make a tube, and they plastic surgeon, and they use the Arha Arla. They don't remove it. They just peel it back or whatever, or do something with it to make a proper urinary tract. So they never remove the Arha Arla. They just place it somewhere else. So he mentioned that this might be relevant to this shara. Do you have to remove the, obviously, may go by the hypospadia, but do you have to remove the arha arla, or is it that you're just peeling back the arha arla? And I think that's discussed over here by the Pisrei Tshuva and the Chamuda Daniel, and they say that no, it's to remove the arha arla, not just to peel back the arha arla. Armila and Priya, huh?
Even if you use the skin to fix the urinary tract, you still removed the tar no matter what.
Of course you do, by peeling it back. The question is, does it have to be removed, or you just put it somewhere else?
I'm saying you put it off.
Oh, you're saying if you take it off, then use it, yeah.
You use part of it, so right. You did it with the meal.
Correct, but I think they, I don't know if they take it off. I'm not, you know.
They use the whole thing to...
I believe so. I don't know. He used to bring it up in this context, this shayla. Shulchan Aruch over here says, Malu Parah, if you just did Mila without Priya, Ki'ilu Loi Mal. So Priya is a critical part of the Mila. But are Mila and Priya two mitzvahs, or are they part, are they two halves of the same? Meaning it sounds like Mal v'loy para kilu loy mal. It sounds like you haven't done anything. Does that really mean you haven't done anything, or you haven't completed the mitzvah of Mila? So Pisrei Tshuva points out that's a machlekes all the way at the end of Hilchos Mila. So in the Reish Samach Vav Sif Yud Daled, Shulchan Aruch discusses one who's doing Mila on Shabbos, when they're doing Mila and Priya at two different stages. We mentioned they used to do Mila and Priya at two different times. We now do it Bebas Achas, but let's say you're doing it at two different times. So the Shulchan Aruch says you should not be mechabed two people to do, one to do the Mila, one to do the Priya. You shouldn't be mechabed two people. And the Ramah disagrees. Lo matzasi raya ledvarav. The other Rabbah, nearly the Shari. Most says you could split up the Mila and the Priya on Shabbos. Give one guy to do the Mila, one guy to do the Priya. So the Gra explains that they're arguing about whether Mila on Shabbos is Hutra or Dechuya. If Mila on Shabbos is Hutra, you could split it up. If Mila on Shabbos is Dechuya, then you can't split it up. But the Pisrei Tshuva quotes from the Yamshel Shlomo that that's not what they're arguing about. What they're arguing about is whether or not Mila without Priya is anything. So Shekhanah calls Mila without Priya is garnished. So you were mechabed the guy who did Mila with nothing, with just Chilul Shabbos. Please come up and be mechabed Shabbos. So that's, he says, not right. But on during the week, you could do it, because he did part, the other guy will do the other half. But here, if he's going to just do Mila without Priya, he's going to be mechabed Shabbos without doing the mitzvah. And the Ramah says, no, Mila and Priya are two separate mitzvahs. There's Mila, and there's Priya. No, below par, Chilul Amal means you haven't finished the mitzvah Mila, but you have done something significant. Right. No, the Gra brings a Raya from Kachin about Hutra Dechuya. But according to the Yamshel Shlomo, it's not Hutra Dechuya. It's a machlekes about whether Mila without Priya is anything, or Mila without Priya is something, but you just haven't completed the mitzvah. One last thing about the process of Mila is the issue of Mitzitza. Rabbi Teller then dealt with Mitzitza at length, but just to review some basic, a few basic things. The Gemara says that the mitzvah of Mitzitza, in order sucking blood out after the mitzvah of Mila, after the Ar HaAra is removed, is in order to prevent infection. It's a sakana. That's what the Gemara says. A male who doesn't do Mitzitza Mavrinolei, we remove him because he's not treating the baby properly. But Rabbi Tendler made the argument that nowadays we have better antiseptics. So why should we continue with the whole practice of Mitzitza at all? The Gemara tells us in Mesechus, the Shulchan Aruch tells us in Ar HaChaim, that they used to wash the baby in hot water before the Mila and hot water after the Mila. Now it's Shin Lamed Aleph Sif Tes in Archaim. Nowadays we no longer do that because we have better antiseptics. So Rabbi Tanna argued, why do we then do mitzvah mitzitza? And he suggested, if you do it nowadays, maybe you chayiv skila and Shabbos, because that's not necessary, a whole story. But the standard approach that's given by Rav HaPoskim, and Rabbi Tanna mentioned this, is the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer says, no, true, in the time of the Gemara, when they started doing mitzitza, it was only in order to prevent infection, but since, and this fits with Reb Chaim, since there's a third integral part of the mitzvah of Mila, which is Hatavas Dambris, so the mitzvah of Mitzitza, since it was part of the Maisa of Mila, even though it was for antiseptic reasons, but it was part of the Maisa of Mila, it now took on added significance. In what context? In the context of this is the formal way that we go about the mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris. So Mitzitza is the formal form of Kiyum of Hatavas Dambris. So it has significance now. Washing the baby in hot water has no technical significance other than serving as an antiseptic. So once they know we don't need it, we did away with it, we discarded it. But Mitzitza took on an added significance of the formal way of fulfilling the mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris, and that's why we continue to do it even on Shabbos. The Paiskim, though, disagree about whether or not it has to be done bepeh. The Gemara obviously was talking, it doesn't even mention that I think it was done bepeh, but it obviously used to be done with bepeh. So the Sefer Abris has a long discussion about this, and he quotes from many Achrayim, Chasam Sefer, Shlomo Levilner, Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, Chaim Oizer, the Reb Chaim. They all said it didn't have to be done bepeh, it could be done with a tube, or even with a kli. You don't even have to use a tube. I think Reb Shechter quotes in the Nefesh HaRav, the Rav once said to Amar, I'll let you do mitzitza bekli, meaning with a tube. But they held it didn't have to be done bepeh, mamish, with the mouth on the Makom Hamila. And I think the YU Rosh Yeshiva, many before I was faculty over here, signed a letter for the RCA, you can find it online, I'm sure, that they all felt that you could do mitzitza with a tube. But there's a lot going on now. You can do your own research just in terms of the... No, Cassie does it with a tube.
He does it?
I believe so, yes. Yes, most do it. It depends. Anyway, but I would say Roiv still do it without a Jew. It depends on which community you're in. Anyway, but there's a lot of other contemporary stuff going on, but you can do, very talented, talked about it, and you can do your own research. That's in terms of the Maisa Mila. Simin Reish Samech Hei begins the Hilchos Arachayim of Mila. We'll just talk about a few things that are relevant and come up, and you should be aware. Shulchan Aruch over here, Simin Reish Samech Hei, quotes three opinions of Rishonim about what is the nature of the bracha of Lachnisa Berviso Shavram Avinu. Again, the Mayo makes the bracha of Ala Mila when he does the Mila. We talked about that already. And the father makes the bracha of Achnisa Shabavisa Shavram Avinu. But what type of bracha is it? So one opinion in the Shulchan Aruch is it's a birchas hamitzah, which is Ayva Lasiyos. And the other opinion is a birchas Shevu Vaida, which comes after the Mila. And then there's another opinion that it's a birchas hamitzah that's Tohi Bacherim, so it's also after the Mila. So is it before? Is it after? So the Shulchan Aruch is Machriya, like the Rosh. You should do it in between the Mila and the Priya. So that works in the time that they did Mila and Priya, two different stages. What about nowadays that we do Mila and Priya Babas Achas? When do you do it? So that's Machlekes in contemporary Achrenim. So Shechter claimed, we hold nowadays the Shavu Vaida, there's no rush. After the Mayal does the Mila and the Priya, make the Bracha of Achnisa Berviso Shavram Avinu. But they call the Paiskim calling the name of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe said you should do it right away. After the Mayal makes the Ala Mila, do it right away to kind of fulfill like the rush that you're doing it at the time of the Mila and the Priya. So that's why many will rush to do the Bracha of Achnisa Berviso Shavram Avinu right away after the Mayal finishes the Ala Mila, and the father should start Achnisa Berviso Shavram Avinu, at least to chaperine a little bit this rush. After that, the Bracha of Ala Mila and the Achnisa Berviso Shavram Avinu, they wrap up the baby. And then someone makes a bracha of Asher Kadosh Yidid Mibeten, the Bari Pri HaGofen, and then they do the Kriya Shem. Why do we do the Kriya Shem at the time of the Bris? So the Sefer Matei Moshe explains that it's because Avraham Avinu's name changed at the time of his Bris, so that was Kaveh the Minik to change the baby's name, or to give him a name, at the time of the Bris. Nowadays, premature babies are a very common scenario, and a premature baby could be stuck in the hospital for months, in which case the baby is not going to have a name then for months. So Ritenna, I think, said you could already start calling the baby by the name that you plan on naming him later. And many hold like that. That perhaps you should name the baby earlier. Rav Shechter has told me, we had a baby early. So I called up Rav Shechter to tell me he had a baby. It was supposed to be an Erev Pesach Bris. He said, oh, it's going to be an Erev Pesach Bris. So I said, no, because the baby is in the hospital. So he said, you should give the baby a name, because the nurses take better care of the babies when the baby has a name. If you know a baby doesn't have a name, they think the parents don't care about the baby. So they said, you should give the baby a name. You should name the baby earlier. So then his wife was also on the phone, and she said, no, you shouldn't give the baby a name, whatever. So then he argued, you should give the baby a name. She was arguing, you shouldn't give the baby a name. So then he said, when they ask you the Shiloh, you tell them, and something like that. Anyway, so somehow you should give the baby a name. So different parts can say you should give the baby a name, not give the baby a name. The advantage to giving the baby a name is, again, and the Sefer Asya, which is a medical journal, discusses all the advantages of giving the baby a name. Is that why? Because nurses take care of the baby better. They say it's good for the mother that the baby should have a name. They form psychological attachments to the baby. And even more than that is because if you could daven, baby's not well. You could daven for the baby if it has a name. If it doesn't have a name, a shiloh, you could daven for the baby. Anyway, whole different things. So some do the baby a name, some don't give the baby a name. Whole different. It turned out that before we ever got around to it, the baby was already, we knew when the baby was going to come out. But some give the baby a different name, they call the name, a third name. That you have no intention of, calling the baby that name. Yeah.
So how could you do the normal mishpach in different role then, according to
your Rabbi Tendler said you don't have to do anything, just start calling the baby a name and do it by the bris. I've heard some people say you should do a mishaberach before. You've heard that too? I've heard some say you should do mishaberach before. But Rav Tendler said, just start calling the baby the name and do the regular Kriya Shem at the meal later.
Or,
I don't know. He probably, this was years ago, so he might have, more than 10 years ago. So he might have changed his opinion by now. I don't know.
He said the same thing in Shiro for this year.
That you should give the baby a name.
The nurse take care of the baby.
Oh, he still says it? Okay. I haven't checked back with him. Yeah, in many years. Okay. Then there's some, so the first thing is you make a Bari Priya, first thing is you make a Shekadish, you didn't be better, and then a Bari Priya Goffin. So if you're the guy who gets the Shekadish Yidin Mibet and then the Bari Priya Gofen, you're going to hand over the kais to somebody to do a Kriya Shem. When do you drink the kais from the Bari Priya Gofen? So the Torah quotes three minhagim about this. One opinion is that you're supposed to drink right away. You're supposed to wait till after the Kriya Shem, then give the kais to him. After the Kriya Shem, take the kais back and drink. I think that used to be the old minig. is they used to give the whole kos to the other guy, the Kriya Shem. It's not a hefsek. Take it back after the Kriya Shem. The one who made the Barbary Govin should drink. Another opinion is you should give it to the Tinoik. Right, give a drop to the Tinoik. You see some oil, and we'll give a drop to the Tinoik. They do that on a tinus that comes up over here on a tinus. A third minute gives, no, the one who made the Barbary Govin should drink. Then they refill the kos, so it shouldn't be a kos pogum, and give it to the guy to make the Kriya Shem. And that's where Rabbi Akiva Eger writes that shot, or Moshe also has like that in the Igros Moshe, and that has become the in vogue thing everywhere. That's what is done. The person who gets the first thing makes a Shekadish in Mibetan, makes the Barbary Govin, drinks a little bit, then you refill the kos, and you give it to the other guy to make the Kriya Shem. How much do you have to drink? So the Taz writes in Aruch Chaim, you don't have to drink a Maloi Lugmav, it's just here a kais for ceremonial purposes. So you just have to be tayim a little bit. Some think you have to drink Maloi Lugmav, blah. If it's Shabbos, that's your Kiddush. So then you got to drink a Maloi Lugmav. And you should have Mezainis there too, to be Yaisi Kiddush from Makam Suda. But if it's not on Shabbos, so then maybe you don't even have to drink a Maloi Lugmav. After this, the Shulchan Aruch over here, Simon Reish Samachay Sifyut Beis, says that you have to make a Suda. That it's that zemiwa. So you have to make a suda, but the Shulchan Aruch says we don't invite people to the suda because if you're invited to a suda, it's mitzvah mila, and you don't come, it's menuda l'shamayim. So unless you want to make your friends menuda l'shamayim, you don't invite them to the to the bris mila. That's what's called in the Pesachei Tshuva over here. So Kohen Yeches, don't invite people to the bris. The Shulchan Aruch in Reish Samech Vav. Last few things. Discusses a child who's born Bein Hashmashos. What is called Bein Hashmashos? The Shach and Sifkan Yudav goes back and forth. Rabbeinu Tam, Ga'inim. Whatever your Shita is what I've gleaned from talking to Paiskim over the years. Whatever your Shita is, by Matzei Shabbos or in general, that's your Shita by Mila. You don't start having to be Cheshish for Rabbeinu Tam. If you're not Cheshish for Rabbeinu Tam by Matzei Shabbos, you don't have to be Cheshish for Rabbeinu Tam over here either. If you are, then you should be over here too. But if you have a child that's born Bein Hashmashos, so then, let's say on a Friday, then it's not Deicha Shabbos. A Suffolk, because it's a Suffolk Mila Bismana, maybe the time is Friday, maybe the time is Shabbos, so then you push off the bris until Sunday. Another time that you have a Suffolk Mila Bismana on Shabbos is if it's a Yotzei Doifen. Because the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, there are two psukim next to each other in Parshas Tazria. One pasuk says, V'yoyim HaShmini Yimob Sarah Alosoi, the bris should be done on the eighth day. The other pasuk says that the mother is Tmei Aleda. So one opinion in the Gemara is that in order to be chayv to do a bris on the eighth day, the mother has to be Tmei Aleda. Then the other opinion in the Gemara is no, that the two are not connected. A whole raya of mikad meinim, whatever, that the two are not connected. The mother does not have to be Tmei Aleda to do a bris on the eighth day. What's the difference? The difference will be, let's say a mother is not Tmei Aleda, do you have to do the bris on the eighth day? Will the bris be Deicha Shabbos? It's unclear in the Gemara. It says Machlekes in the Gemara. Well, it's a Suffolk in the Gemara. Machlekes in the Gemara. Whether or not later, where the mother's not Tmei Leda, does the bris have to be on the eighth day? Nafkamina will be Deicha Shabbos. Where do you have this? You have this by cesarean section. It's a Yaitse Deifen. The mother's not Tmei Leda. Is the bris Deicha Shabbos or not? So the Shulchan Aruch over here, Sif Yud. Reish Tam Avot, Sif Yud says a Yaitse Deifen. The Mila is not Deicha Shabbos. Because the mother is not Tmei Aleda, so we're Cheshesh, that the bris doesn't have to be done today. It's a Suffolk Mila Bismana, we're not sure if it's Deicha Shabbos. Maybe she doesn't have to be Tmei Aleda to do it on the 8th day, maybe she does. It's a Suffolk Mila Bismana, it's not Deicha Shabbos. This issue comes up also with regards to inseminations, because if Shlomo Zalman writes in the Mincha Shlomo that the mother is not Tmei Aleda for a whole reason that's beyond the scope of our discussion, the mother is not Tmei Aleda by an insemination, because it's Maisa Nisin, whatever. It's not a normal delivery, not a normal pregnancy. So, if it's an insemination and the child is born on Shabbos, the bris or Shlomo Zalman Paskins is not Deicha Shabbos.
No,
but if he claims it's not a normal. It's not a normal later. Yeah, but it is a Yotzei. It is a Peter Rechem. Came out through the Rechem. He just says it's not what the Torah is describing. I don't have time to get into the lumdus of Shlomo Zalman. Shachter quotes it too all the time. The lumdus is because it's not a normal Eda, and the Torah is talking about normal. Doesn't mean that it's not Peter Rechem. Anyway, so but the easy solution is if you have such a thing, you don't want to publicize the fact that the child was inseminated, if product of insemination, just say the child's yellow, you know, jaundice. We don't do the bris, the child is jaundice. No one's going to start asking questions. Just say it's jaundice, we push it off till Sunday. Oh, Sunday bris, no one's going to give you a hard time. Shulchan Aruch, last thing, Shulchan Aruch Sif Ches says if you have a child that's born Bein Hashmashes or let's say a Yotzei Dofen, where it's a Suffolk Mila Bismana on Shabbos, so we're not Decha Shabbos. What about Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias? So the Rosh's opinion is, it's not Decha Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias either. The Shach in Sivka in Ches quotes the opinion of the Rambam that it is Decha Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias, except Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah, because that's Kedusha Achas. So according to the Rambam, a Suffolk Mila Bismana is Decha Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias. According to the Rosh, it's not. The Pischei Tshuva quotes from the Neid of Yehuda that the Homach Lekes was only actually by a Vaday Mila Shaloi Bizmana. And he's only talking about a child that's born, a child who gets better. But if it would actually be a Suffolk Mila Bizmana, like a Bein HaShemosh's baby or a Yotzei Dofen baby, then everyone would agree that it would be Deicha. Everyone would agree that it would be Deicha Yom Tov Sheni. Rabbi Kiva Eger explains it's like a Sfeik Sfeika. Pischei Tshuva in the name of the Neid of Yehuda, Sifkat and Zion. The Homach Lekes in the Rosh and the Rambam is not by a Suffolk Mila Bismana, Yotzei Dofen, or Ben Hashmosh's baby, it's by a Vaday Mila Shaloi Bismana. If it would be a Suffolk, you could do it on a Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias, with the exception of a Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah, because then you don't have a Sfeik Sfeika. Every other Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias, you could do a Mila Shaloi Bismana. A Suffolk Mila Bismana. You could do it on a Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias. And I think he even says Yom Tov Sheni Shal Rosh Hashanah. And Rabbi Aaron Cutler disagrees with Mishnah's Rabbi Aaron. He says, no, not Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah.
The Mishnah says you can't do
I don't know. That's what Rabbi Yehuda writes right here. He says, Kavanotzim hu vadei shaloi bezmana. Kegon shenor le'erev Shabbos. But he says if it would be a Suffolk Mila bezmana, Suffolk Mila shaloi bezmana, you could do it on Yom Tov Sheni Shogolias, even Rosh Hashanah, and Rabbi Aaron Cutler disagrees about Rosh Hashanah. One shul Rav told me the shaila comes up every year. Suffolk, Mila, Bismana, Yom Tov Sheni, Rosh Hashanah, that's Machlekes Neid of Yehuda and Rabbi Aaron Cutler. I don't know, I never heard about the shaila coming up, but that's what they claim. Okay, Mr. Shem, next week, probably on Monday, we'll have the